Everybody, special greeting to the Minister of Public Enterprise, who's supposed to be part of this session. I think he's already logged in. Also, greetings to the Chairperson of Transnet Board, Dr. Popo Molefe, and also to the CEO. The new CEO, I think she's just appointed before we actually met here. Miss Foshia Deby. Welcome.
Good morning.
CEO. I understand also before I even start saying anything that the Deputy Minister and the DG, I'm told that they have attended the scoper. But they won't be part of our session today. If they are, they will join us later. Let me just explain the purpose of this session. Of course, to get a briefing from Transnet on progress that has been made in addressing governance challenges in the company. Transnet is one of the state-owned companies that have been badly damaged by corruption and state capture. I think we're all aware of that even before we came in as this committee. This national logistics company is responsible for improving efficiencies in the economy, driving government's infrastructure development program. And our interest as a portfolio committee on public enterprises is to ensure that this company continue to invest in infrastructure and promote and support small and medium enterprises, promote localization and beneficiation, create employment and invest in skill development. And I think we're all expecting a lot of job losses in our economy. But we wish that Transnet doesn't fall into that problem. So we know that there's no company that is immune from that crisis. And also we wish also that Transnet, because as members of this political committee, we had an opportunity to visit some of the plants of this entity. And we have seen a massive infrastructure and massive workshops that are supposed to be utilized for the industrialization that we endeavor to achieve in the country, so that our country doesn't only solely depend on primary production of goods, but it also produces secondary goods at some point. The infrastructure we saw tells us that South Africa is capable of producing its own cars, its own trucks, its own locomotive and so on. Therefore, we would like this kind of an aspiration achieved in our lifetime, even in this sixth parliament. We would like to see that. And those will help Transnet to in the changing and improving of our economy. To achieve this, of course, we must get rid of corruption and wastage in operation. I now call upon the minister, as per the arrangement with the department. I think the minister will start and followed by the chairperson of the board, and then perhaps in the process the CEO will address us. But I think minister, I think it's time to give, but also I want to, I think I didn't welcome portfolio committee members, members of parliament. You are highly welcome in this portfolio committee. This is your meeting. I'm just sharing it, but this meeting belongs to you. You will have time to engage after the presentation. I think we are expected here to contribute, because our contribution will also build towards improving the situation we find this entity in. Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to you and to the honourable members and to the Transnet board and Transnet officials and members of the public and media that would be participating. I'm going to be brief, firstly, but secondly, Chairperson, I want to apologize. At about 10:30 or so, I might have to excuse myself for an hour to attend to an important cabinet meeting, and then if you are still meeting, I will return. By way of introduction, as you know, the Transnet board has now been in place for almost 2 years, firstly. Secondly, they've done extremely well to get some of the legacy issues resolved in relation to management and in relation to good governance within Transnet. They have also taken some steps to undertake recovery of funds that have been lost to Transnet, and a lot more needs to be done in that particular regard. And part of the challenge in governance terms, as you correctly pointed out, Chairperson, is going to be to pursue those who were responsible for various forms of corruption, including those involved in the locomotive deal, amongst many other transactions that took place during the period of state capture. Secondly, in relation to the management team, you've correctly welcomed the new CEO who's been in office now for 7 or 8 months. Together with the board, they've put in place an effective management team. And the chair and the CEO can brief you on the progress that they've made in that regard. Secondly, they are attending to issues of procurement, where the major issues of corruption often actually take place. And thirdly, they are reviewing some of the major investment decisions that have been made. Once they're ready, they'll brief together with ourselves, the portfolio committee. But fourthly, we've been through a difficult period in relation to the various operations of Transnet. So firstly, at the level of ports, there have been challenges, particularly in relation to the weather on the West Coast and in Cape Town in particular. Initially, it was felt that this would actually impact on exports from the Western Cape, particularly of citrus and other fruits. But the CEO will report to you on the many steps that they've taken to make sure that the agricultural sector involved there is not compromised. In fact, they've pleasantly surprised everyone. But the overarching issue has been the COVID pandemic, the impact on the front line, workers in Transnet, in terms of infections, the impact on the various groups of workers at the dockside, and the manner in which the management team has actually dealt with the various contingencies, which has been, I think, very praiseworthy in the kind of context that they found themselves in. You will recall that during the lockdown, essential items were being allowed through the ports expeditiously in order that our combating of the pandemic would be effective. But the key factor is still the human factor, and the number of frontline workers who were infected, as a result of which groups of workers had to be laid off, and that obviously made an impact on the operations of the port as well, but notwithstanding that, there's been a recovery. On the freight rail side, that has continued fairly well in this context, but there has been an impact on volumes of mining resources leaving South Africa, so they can give you some numbers in that particular regard, and indicate what the impact of those numbers are on the revenue side, broadly speaking, and there's been an interesting path to recovery context of the post-severe lockdown period, but also the drop in demand globally for certain commodities arising from the way in which the pandemic swept through different parts of the world. The third area is the pipeline. It's good to see that the Hawks made some arrests yesterday, or I think the day before, because the fuel pipeline has been the subject of sabotage and theft of fuel. And again, the management team can give you some details in relation to how they are impacted, but secondly, how they are, with the assistance of law enforcement agencies, combating some of those elements as well. There's some data that they will provide to you, an insight into how the supply chains across the world are impacted by the COVID pandemic, and I think that will be an unfolding situation over the next maybe year as the world begins to adjust to the reality that having the workshop of the world concentrated in one part of the world can become very inhibiting on the one hand, and a pandemic like the COVID pandemic can actually have quite a severe impact on the disruption of trade routes and the supply chains that actually operate. So the committee members might benefit from some of those early signs of adjustments that are taking place. And that will obviously have an impact upon the prospects that the port in South Africa would have and the manner in which Transnet and the ports will have to adapt to accommodate possibly additional traffic, but to adapt their strategies as well in relation to the logistics around the African continent and the kind of role that Durban, Cape Town, amongst other harbors play, and the role that Rail plays in that logistics framework as well. So that's a brief introduction and overview. If you agree, Chair, I'll hand over to the Chair of the Board, who is hasn't been well for the last 2 weeks, so he's done remarkably well to make himself available. And we want to thank him for his extra effort in this particular regard. As you can see, he's still in a recovery mode. So, and he's got his, what do you want to call it, beanie on at the moment. I'm glad to see that he's looking pretty good in the circumstances. And then, in about half an hour or so, I might disappear for a short while and then return to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks, Minister, honorable members of the committee, the directors, management, executive team of Transnet. I think the minister has given a very good introduction. As it has been pointed out, I've not been well, so I won't be talking in this meeting unless I'm compelled to talk. I just want to indicate that we have received chairperson apologies from Dr. Mfamati, Mr. Louis Fanciona, Mayor Paul Etlape, who might join us later, and Advocate Opa Motaung has been also attacked by COVID-19 like me, and he's in hospital. Louis Mfamati, and the Tlape, they all have board meetings which are happening today where they are dealing with urgent issues of annual financials. So I wish to apologize on their behalf. way in which we propose to proceed is that the CEO, group CEO, will give an introduction and then allow heads of various operating divisions and functional areas in the company to present on the strategic issues that the committee has raised and those that the minister alluded to. I'd like to stop there and call on Ms. Dabi Portia to then take over.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Chair of the Board of Transnet, Chair of the Committee, and Committee members. Thank you very much for inviting us to present on Transnet. Apologies for not switching on the camera. I want to also add Ms. Rampak, one of our board members, is actually listening in as we speak. So, Chair, I have what we'd like to do is to slide the presentation. What we decided was to have the Exco available to present on their various topics, but they, most of the OD CEOs will fall off once they finish, and a few of us are going to be steady hands throughout the presentation. We have gone into quite an extensive detail, partly to update on what has been happening, but also as the Minister started, to ensure that we cover quite comprehensively as much as possible of what was a follow-up from your last meeting, as well as to deal with some sense of what we are busy working with. And to our minds, I think it's important that we give comfort that despite COVID, and also most importantly, where we started off as an economy where we were facing 0.9% GDP growth for 2020, we'd like to give you a sense that actually we're working hard to make sure that we are not the weakest link in the system. Emmanuel, can you please slide the presentation? So the content, the way that we've covered it, is that the first part of the presentation gives you an overview of the whole of Transnet. So we will have a presentation by our CFO, then we will have, and I'll introduce the Exco in a moment, Chair, we'll have a presentation in economic and commodity outlook, presentation on ICT, governance, legal and regulatory matters, business development. We will also talk about people, our people, which I must say have been fantastic, who have been fantastic through this COVID period, and even now when we're buckling down to make sure that we save as many of us as we possibly can and ensure that we also have a stabilizing impact in the supply chain. And then we have the various CEOs who will present by operating divisions. And then I will end at the end, I'll end off the presentation at number 8. In terms of the ODs, we have freight rail first, then we have transport engineering, then properties, then we'll pipelines, port terminals, and a national port authority. The intention is to use the time to cover until the end. But Chair, I would appreciate if you would give us a sense of how much time you'd like us to take for the presentation so that we can make time available for questions.
Oh, okay. Perhaps if you can, because you've already taken something close to 10 minutes, if it's not 15, then you are left with 45 minutes.
Okay, Chair. Okay, it's going to be... okay, next slide, please. So to start off, Transnet's mandate, as members would know, is to assist with the lowering of the cost of doing business in South Africa. It's also to enable economic growth and to ensure that there's security of supply in providing appropriate port, rail, and pipelines infrastructure, ensuring that this is cost-effective and efficient, and we ensure that increasingly are improving also our benchmarking. This aligns with the mandate and the strategic intent statement for Transnet. Next slide. we tried to do a summary of the last meeting that Transnet had with the committee, which was on the 29th of October last year. Some of the issues that came up, and we hope that the presentation will cover these, was consequence management, issues around fruitless and wasteful expenditure, what and we were doing around corporate social investment, and also issues around operational efficiencies. The questions were raised around investigations. We, at the time, last year, had appointed a law firm that would do the investigations of some of the serious offences which were committed inside the company. You would have seen by now that the SIU have been making progress on some of the investigations directly. At the time, we had a lot of leadership positions vacant and so many acting people. I will show you the final thankfully completely full EXCO team, save for one individual who has started the handover, but we were requested by the Eastern Cape to help them ensure a smooth transition, and he will effectively take office on the 1st of October, but he's already available and is on the call just to briefly say, to brief the committee. We've also covered some of the issues around food fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's a key concern of ours, and also we are fighting hard to deal with irregular expenditure. Some of the issues around irregular, and I think as the committee you will hear a lot of the SOEs, there definitely needs to be a lot more work done around ensuring that in an attempt to deal with corruption, you don't over-control to the extent that the entity is almost unable to move, because then that does have an effect of dampening demand in the economy. Next slide. Oh, yes, and then one of the issues that we will report on is what the work we're doing around properties, the 1064 locomotives transactions, and many other issues that we're trying to move on. And one of the issues that had come out last year when we made the presentation was around the class, the pension fund, the class action. That, thankfully, has been finalized, and we are now completely square on that matter. The next slide. Emmanuel, I wanted to show the EXCO. So, Chair, as Emmanuel is loading the EXCO, the team is now completely fully established, and we will be presenting. So, as indicated, we've got, and even on this presentation, there's Brian Homo, who is our Chief Audit Executive. Dr. Andrew Shaw will present, and he's our Chief of Strategy and Planning. Ms. Yuli Sakani is our Chief Business Development Officer, and she's also going to present. Mr. Nonkululeko Godlamini is our Chief, our Group CFO. Mr. Kaya Ngema is our Chief of People. Our Chief Legal Officer, Advocate Sandra Kutsia, is not in. Unfortunately, she too is ill with COVID, and we have Stanley, who will be standing in to present on her behalf. We have also got Pandelani Munyai, who is the Chief Information Officer. And then there's also our Treasurer Mark Greg McDonald, and also our Chief Procurement Officer, Vule Namakulu. In terms of the CEOs of the ODs, you've got Cesar Zamelo, who is the Chief Officer, Chief Executive of Freight Rail. There's Ralph Mill, who's the Chief Executive of Transnet Engineering. And we've got Mr. Belile Dube, who's the CEO of Port Terminals. We've the executive that I was talking about, who actually effectively takes over on the 1st of October, but is in the meantime available, is Mr. Pepe Silinga. But thank you very much to Khumusa Phihlela, who continues to act in this position until Pepe can take over properly. And then the Chief Executive Officer of Pipelines, Advocate Michelle Phillips, and another newbie from yesterday, the Chief Executive of Properties, Mr. Kape Pashamushak. Thank you very much. I just thought we would introduce the team, and when they present, everyone will show their own pictures. And Chair, Ms. Nkululeko Dlamini is going to take over and present on the finance.
Thank you, CEO, Chairperson of the committee, Minister, and all the honourable members in the meeting today. The Chairperson of the Transnet Group, good morning. Chair, I will focus on the financial part of the presentation today, and really the intention is to update the committee on the financial performance since we last were at the committee, which was about October 2019, and really the focus then was the performance as of 31st March 2019, so we didn't get a chance to share the performance of September 2019, but we would also like to just indicate, as the CEO and Minister has indicated, in the last 4 months with the lockdown and the easing of restrictions, how we have performed financially. We will also just touch on, Chair, on our borrowing program, which is quite a significant element of our business in ensuring that we continue to fund our operations and the impact thereof, because with the economic conditions, COVID and so on, we've seen a number of downgrades coming through to the South African sovereign, but also impacting a number of entities, including ourselves. So just as a start, Chair, we have on slide number 6, at high level, a view of our various operating divisions and how they contribute to the revenue line of Transnet, with freight rail being the largest contributor at 51%, using its railway tracks and therefore quite significant in our space, and it's followed really by port terminals contributing 16% and national ports 15%. The engineering division 12% and pipelines 6%, and they actually contribute in their own way based on the assets that they run. As an entity, we are having assets to the value of about 355 billion rand to run the business, as well as about 56,000 people. So that is really the stature and the structure of the operations of Transnet. If I go to slide 7, Chair, just a little bit of detail in these numbers where we indicate that we do contribute solidly, but much as we have areas of improvement, we are a business of about 74 billion revenue as of 2019 March, and with operating expenses of about 40 billion, and really the largest contributor there being the personnel costs of the 56,000 people, contributing about 57% in our costs. We continue to see positive earnings before interest and tax, and therefore we believe that you know, Transnet still continues to be a solid performance and will look for improvements. Chair, we are sharing today only the results excluding the 31st March 2020 because we are currently in a closed period. We are working towards finalizing our year end by 30 September 2020, where we'll be submitting to National Treasury and hopefully doing a public announcement. So you will note in these results we're not touching March on the 2020 March performance, until we've done the audit and have got a sign-off, and we can then come back to the committee and announce publicly. So you will not see much on the 2020 results. But if I go to slide number 7, Chair, just moving forward, and slide number 8 rather, and this is really to just highlight the 5-year performance starting in 2015, where we have, we believe that as much as the economy has been facing significant challenges over quite an extended period of time, Transnet has continued to contribute in revenue and in creating jobs and in delivering a positive bottom line to the economy. We, however, have noted a growth in our borrowings level, and I will touch a bit on the fact that it's an area of focus for us, to ensure that we do not get that number running away. and still manage within what we can sustainably afford to run with. The next slide, Chair, is to highlight some of the numbers as we move forward from 31st March 2019 to 30 September, which is the half-year results before the March 2020 that we are working on. And again, there you can see that the revenue line has continued to grow in compared to the prior period, which would have been March 2018, where we saw growth of about 2.9%, really driven by, again, the volumes largely in the iron ore space, as well as the petroleum. The operating expenses is an area of focus. We have had to see an increase of 5.8% in personnel costs, which talks to salary increases and other elements. But also the electricity costs have continued to rise. However, in terms of the overall picture, we've seen a much less growth of 1.2%, which is really driven by some of the activities trying to get some cost efficiencies. Chair, the other element I would like to just highlight on that slide is that our gearing, which talks to how much indebted we are based on our borrowings, remained at about 43%. We have a target not to exceed 50% in gearing. And in fact, in the short to medium term, we would like to put through some strategies to ensure that the number reduces even further from the levels that we are at the moment. There are other ratios that we monitor very closely, including the cash interest cover, where we have some agreements with our lenders to ensure they don't go below a certain level, and we have been comfortable since the last reported period that they were fairly within the levels. However, we are having to monitor them very closely, Chair, in the context of the current COVID scenario where we've seen a reduction in the levels of activity, but we are still within the levels that we have targeted. On the next slide, Chair, we basically just focus then on the July 2020 picture. So if you look at the September 2019, in comparison to the prior year in 2018, we did see some level of growth. However, when we look at the 4 months to July 2020, we begin to see the impact of the pandemic in the last 4 months of our performance. And we know that the economy is contracting, and we are expecting further contraction in the next few months as well. And this is showing itself into our revenue line as Transnet and will therefore impact a number of areas. However, as we went further with the lockdown easing up between April and July, we've seen some level of improvement in the revenue line. We are also focusing a lot on our operating expenses to just ensure that we can get some savings and manage well within what we had budgeted, although we have had to make some provisions to cater for COVID requirements and expenses to ensure that we look after our people in the context of the COVID. Also, our capital investments saw some slowdown, Chair, because there wasn't much activity in the construction sites in some areas, and therefore we didn't spend much in that area. However, we are seeing now some activity picking up in the next few months. We believe that we will start seeing some expenditure in that area as well. In slide number 11, just to give a bit of a background and detail, Chair, on what we've seen happening in our revenue line. So we do have, in fact, from the very beginning, we were categorized as an essential services service, so we continue to operate. However, it was quite minimal compared to the activity we had planned for the financial year. So certain areas of the business, like the container terminal, were able to operate close to normal. whilst if you look at the auto sector related part of the business, we were doing probably 50% of the activities, and the petroleum volumes were also impacted due to the shutdown. What you then see in the revenue line as a result of these varying levels of activity is that our revenue line in April was only at about 60% of what we had planned initially when we put together and submitted our corporate plan. However, in April, in May, April being the first month of the lockdown, in May, June and July, we've begun to see a bit of a pickup in activity from the level of 60% that we showed in April to about 84% in the month of July. We are busy closing the August month, and we do expect a bit of a pickup as well, given that we have now moved to level two. And therefore, in comparison to the budget, we do expect that we may not make our targets, but in some areas, as we are anticipating the likes of some of the areas may pick up to the levels of 90%, we will improve but may not fully catch up to the levels that we budgeted for. So whilst we have a revenue line that we anticipate to behave in the manner that I've just highlighted, we are also focusing on managing the cost side, Chair. Some of the areas that we are looking at is basically to bank some of the savings that we would have saved over the last four months from the operating costs, and we are anticipating a minimum of about 270 million in the financial year. We also have seen the Reserve Bank cutting interest rates, and because of our significant borrowing levels, the reduction in interest rate has had a positive impact of about 700 million on our bottom line, and that actually is assisting in managing costs. We are looking at procurement practices, as the CEO has indicated, to ensure that we can get the best for our buck in that area. And there are other areas, Chair, that we are looking at to improve the cost side of the business. And therefore, if I just move to slide number 12 with that, Chair, and we will see the better picture when we report the half-year results of this financial performance, which is coming up in about 4 weeks when we close the half-year picture. So that is really the landscape of our financial performance for the last 4 months, Chair. But if I can just move off to our debt and the borrowing program, we continue to interact with the capital markets to raise money, and we have had a positive response. Even though we know that the markets are quite constrained in terms of liquidity, we have managed to raise money. However, our area of focus very specifically is to ensure that our debt retention or the repayments that we have to make are catered for, and we have catered for them in our borrowing plan. This is the area that we've seen the rating agencies taking significant interest in that their concern is that the Transnet borrowing program is such that we have repayments, and they are concerned that with the liquidity constraint in the market, we may not necessarily be able to meet the repayments as they fall due. And we've spent quite a significant amount of time taking them in detail through our plans for the coming redemptions, and we're quite comfortable that we are covered. But we are looking at this picture in the context of trying to reduce our gearing in the short to medium term, where we will ensure that as we raise new borrowings, we make sure that the tenor is extended, and therefore we do not have any redemptions due in the 3, 4, or 5 years, and we are working with lenders in that respect. But also, Chair, in relation to the capital expenditure, we are doing a lot of work to ensure that the capital expenditure, which is a significant element of our business, is properly scrubbed, and all the expenditure that we make at least doesn't exceed about 80% of the cash that we generate from our operations, and therefore we can actually sustain ourselves without raising significant borrowings. and the operational performance improvements that the CEO will probably touch on will also assist in improving our internally generated funding as well as containing costs. So those are some of the initiatives we would like to drive from in the immediate term to ensure that we can improve the level of borrowings that we have. On the last slide, Chair, which is slide number 13, I would just like to touch at the status with our rating agencies, and indeed we've had significant engagement and very frequently. So we have Moody's as one rating agency as well as Standard & Poor's. When the sovereign was downgraded on the 27th of March, we were also downgraded literally a few days later by Moody's, and basically as far as our rating links to the sovereign. However, they also indicated that they would like us to be reviewed for further downgrade, and really it was around the concern on our liquidity levels in relation to the redemptions that are coming up. And we spent the 3 months, and they were engaging quite significantly in that period. And they did then come back in July to highlight that the review was getting finalized. And we were downgraded as a standalone in Transnet, while the headline rating that links to the sovereign remained the same, and we have a negative outlook. So it's an area we are still engaging them on, and the plans to extend our borrowings to much longer tenor and look for efficiencies in the business is an area we believe will assist in turning the ratings to better levels. The same with Standard & Poor's, and our downgrade with them was around May the 7th. And that is where we have a lower grading level, Chair, compared to Moody's. And therefore, when Standard & Poor's decided to downgrade us in May, the impact from Moody's was not felt in the context of our borrowings or any expenditure in terms of interest cost, because we had already taken into account any impact in terms of the facilities that may have had any repayment requirements in terms of their covenant. And we have since engaged all the lenders that were impacted by the Standard & Poor's, and there was about 12 lenders. They've all given us waivers of the agreements that would have made us to have to prepay to the tune of about 27 billion, and we are quite comfortable, therefore, that that risk has been mitigated. Although any downgrade comes with additional costs, we've had to cater for about 11 million rands per year in interest costs as a result of the downgrade. And therefore, Chair, that is a significant area of focus for us going forward to ensure we can improve our ratings and improve on our borrowing levels, and so that we can improve our gearing. And I will stop on that slide, Chair. Thank you very much.
Chair, I have requested that the rest of the executive take 5 minutes to briefly just present on their area. Given the time that you have given us, we might not be able to get in detail to the ODs, but I do think that it's actually quite useful to get the following presentations, because they give you an overview of the whole of Transnet. Andrew.
Okay, now before CEO, I have already communicated to you guys. I'm not sure who got the message, but I do send the message to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee extending your time to another 30 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson. I will be brief. Let me go through very rapidly the economic outlook that Transnet and indeed the whole country faces. I'll start with the global growth context. What we've seen is huge reductions in GDP around the world. What the table in the slide demonstrates to you is that during 2019, most parts of the economy around the world were doing relatively well. Advanced economies were at about 1.7%, and the outlier growth was in China at 6%. South Africa, unfortunately, due to its fundamentals prior to COVID, was not in a very strong position, and growth in that year was weak. 2020 forecasts, what you see there in terms of advanced economies as well as China, is that advanced economies have been much more thoroughly impacted by COVID than emerging economies, and particularly than China. South Africa, unfortunately, has had a very negative impact, and you'll see the forecast to close 2020 is a reduction in GDP of about 8%, and some forecasts extend that up to 9.5%, as I'll show you on the next slide. The forecast to come out of the COVID down cycle of 2020, again, for South Africa, is a low GDP forecast. Advanced economies are expected to reach about 5.4%. China to go back up very close to its previous growth at around 8.2%, so exceed its previous growth in the 2019 year, and South Africa at around 3.5%. All these countries are forecast to have a relatively lower growth in the 2022 financial year, as there's sort of an expectation that growth will increase quite dramatically as we come out of COVID, and then we'll start to normalize thereafter. In South Africa, trade has contracted by about 3.5% negatively. And if you look on the right-hand side of the slide, what you'll see is that we are faced with the share of economies in recession over a 150-year period. We are faced with one of the worst recessionary environments that we've had since the 1930s. So that is quite a dismal look going forward. However, what I can show you in the following few slides, Emmanuel, if you can shift to the next slide, is that if you look at the commodities on which Transnet is dependent, you will see that the commodity prices have largely remained stable. What has happened, and I'll show on the slide, is that export performance has declined, and this relates very closely to what the GCFO presented previously. And so we have had a reduction in volumes as a consequence of COVID, particularly in the container market, and particularly as a consequence of the inability of supply chains to deliver into the global economies. Inflationary pressures don't really exist at this point in time, which is a positive outlook, and commodity prices have remained stable, which again is a commodity is a positive outlook. The last point on this slide, which is worthy of just mentioning, is that the latest estimate from the Bureau of Economic Research is that GDP will shrink by about 9.5%. So that's slightly below what we had estimated in the previous slide. Emmanuel, if you could jump to the next slide. The commodity outlook has been not as badly impacted as we had thought it might be, certainly not as negatively impacted as after the 2008 financial crisis. The one area where we have seen a dramatic impact is in respect of crude oil. And largely this is because of the impact on fuel usage as a consequence of all economies in the world faced with significant lockdowns. So the usage of crude oil and liquid fuel reduced substantially, as it did in South Africa. The risk to the price forecasts at this point in time are still a little uncertain, but we are starting to see globally that emerging from the COVID pandemic is a little bit of stabilization around commodity prices. If we can jump to the next slide, Emmanuel. So if we look at thermal coal, Transnet is very exposed to thermal coal as one of its key exports, predominantly through Richards Bay, but also to a lesser extent through the ports of Durban, as well as feeding of thermal coal into certain Eskom power stations. What we've seen is that the pricing increased from 2017 to 2019, and then began to decline largely as a consequence of thermal coal's very negative climate change implications. And so around the world, many power generation capabilities were slowly starting to transfer from thermal coal across into natural gas and other commodities. Where we have seen sustained use of thermal coal is in South Africa's predominant export markets, which are India, Pakistan, Indonesia. So we believe that whilst the price will reduce, demand will still continue to remain stable, and we have seen that whilst we've been able to keep volumes up through our own challenges around delivering through the social distancing program that we've had to in TFR and the ports, there is volume to move in this particular sector. If we go to the next slide. Iron ore prices, again, if you look at the chart, you will see from 2018, we're actually starting to reflect upward trajectory. And if you look at the forecast projections in the lower part of the slide, you will see that they do drop off, but nothing as dramatically as they dropped off in the 2008 financial crisis. So there is some stability in respect of most of the commodity forecasts going forward, except, of course, for oil. If we go to the next slide. Manganese prices continue to sustain some upward momentum, which is very good for South Africa. We are very well positioned as a manganese exporter, as you well know. Prices have sustained themselves since 2017 to 2020, and the projections going forward is that China's demand for manganese will be largely flat, and that the pricing will remain largely stable with a little bit of an upward trajectory. So the pressure on Transnet is to ensure that we can meet the demand in terms of our ability to export as much manganese as the market can facilitate. If we can move to the next slide. Container trade has seen a sharp drop-off as a consequence of COVID. If you look at the upward trajectory in the graph, you will see that pre-2009, we were growing at about 6% per annum, which is roughly double GDP. Post-2009, that dropped off to about 3% per annum in terms of container trade, and that's containers moving through the ports predominantly. Largely, we use a metric of about double GDP. So in that post-2009, we were in the region of about 2.5, coming down to 1% GDP in the latter half of 2018-19. What we then saw is quite a significant drop-off in 2020 as a consequence of the lockdown, as a consequence of the challenges around allocating only certain types of freight as priorities in the early part of March, and then a bit of a pickup we are expecting to achieve in 2021-2022. However, you will see it's quite muted. The pickup in containers is expected only to reach 2019 levels at the end of 2024. So container trade is seen to be quite heavily reduced, largely as a consequence of the challenging domestic economy. If we can go to the next slide. Fuel demand has been one of the more challenging areas for Transnet. Our big exposure here is through the NMPP, the multi-product pipeline, in which we move fuel from the port of Durban into Gauteng, within Gauteng, it is then distributed to most of the other inland destinations. What you will see on the slide is in respect of refined fuels, which are largely the fuels that are used for motor vehicles and trucks, there's a sharp downturn in 2020. We've estimated that using three scenarios, but all scenarios show the extent of a massive reduction in billions of liters moved. Coming out of the COVID period, there's a slow pickup in fuel. It reaches a peak at around 2030, 2031. And then as a consequence of a shift away from fossil fuels and liquid fuels, which is a global phenomena, we start to see a downward trajectory. Previously, if you look at the dotted line, our estimates in about 2018 actually showed an upward trajectory for liquid fuels. A revision in respect of the use of liquid fuels globally has led us to a view that either we will flatline in respect of fuels, which is the light blue line, or we will see quite a significant decline in demand for fuel in the 2033 to 2044 period. And this is largely independent of economic growth. It's really because of the shift away from a fossil fuel dependence that is beginning to emerge quite rapidly globally. And many analysts argue that COVID has pulled that forward. Jet fuel is a different trajectory. Jet fuel is used for aviation, and largely we see a fairly strong upward trajectory, but it might take some time for the aviation market to recover. And that is, I think, the last slide that I have, Emmanuel. Unless there's a final conclusion slide on risk. I've got two more slides. I won't go into this in a lot of detail. Essentially, this is an estimate that we use in terms of looking at the scenarios for GDP going forward. I've already spent some time explaining the expectation around GDP. So perhaps the next slide, Emmanuel, which looks at the risks. I think it's been taken out. So if I can hand back to you, Portia. Thank you.
So, Pandilani, can you quickly get on to your section?
Okay, Emmanuel, are you there? Okay, so I'll quickly go to my presentation, Portia. What I will do here is I'll give the progress update up to so far in terms of what has been achieved since we started working on this project on the ICT space. So first thing first, the main project that I think I should give an update on is the IT data service contract, which obviously up to so far, maybe just as a way of background, in the past the contract has been with T-Systems. So after the expiry of the T-System contract, then we went to the RFP, we went to the market. So many service providers applied. And then after that, then there were two companies that were shortlisted, which was T-Systems and T-Systems and Gijima. So as a result of some evaluations based on the independent assessment request that was done by the board, it was decided that the contract should be given to the second bidder, which was T-Systems at the time, based on the risk assessment that was conducted. However, then Gijima decided to take the process into the court, of which they were then awarded the declaratory order to say that the contract should be awarded to Gijima. So since then, Transnet has been engaged with Gijima to negotiate and make sure that at least the contract is signed and sealed and the process of operation should start. So when we started, we took over in terms of making sure that we negotiate with Gijima and conclude on some of the sticky points that were problematic for the organizations. So we managed to resolve all the issues and sign the contract in June. So as it stands now, the contract is in operation. So some of the few activities that we are busy working on now or that the contract will cover are mainly the data center as well as the hosting service space where Gijima is assisting us with the design, implementation, support and maintaining all the data center hosting services that we have at the moment. So I'm not going to go through all the services that we have based on the time that I have, but suffice to say that the IT data service contract that we have at the moment, of which we signed the MSA, is very critical for the operation of the whole Transnet because it provides the full support for the in the organization. Another area that I need to give an update is on the network services, where in the past what happened was the service contract for network was awarded to Liquid Telecoms, where Liquid used to provide all the services to Transnet based on what you call the managed service provider concept, which obviously it was a complete outsourced service where they provide all the WAN, local area network, as well as unified communications and do the complete management to us. So that contract came to an expiry sometimes in November, 2019. So what we are doing now, we are going through the processes of the RFP, and suffice to say that at this point in time, in terms, we are trying by all means to make sure that whoever is the winning bidder on this side should make sure that they will assist us in building, designing, and training our own employees and hand over immediately to make sure that at least Transnet on its own should be able to manage and control the whole network space. So the reason that I gave the background in terms of the IT data services as well as the connection or the network service contract is to pave way in terms of the digital transformation strategy that we've been working on. Obviously, something that everybody is talking about in the country to say that what is it that companies are doing to make sure that they leverage on the fourth industrial revolution technologies. So in this case, from our side, We are now starting with all the consolidation of different applications across the organizations, and we're trying to make all of them into a transversal integration platform where we avoid some serious duplications that are happening within the operating divisions to make sure that if we do it this way, we are going to be leveraging on the economies of scale. So what we have now in terms of the strategy is to say that we are building that transversal integration platform. And then from there, based on that, we are going to be running all these different applications, which is your artificial intelligence, cyber security, and so forth. So the main purpose here, as I said earlier on, is to make sure that at least Transnet as an organization, we traverse into a unified digital strategy where all of us as an organization are leveraging on the economies of scale, and we see exactly what is happening. So most importantly, in terms of this digital transformation strategy, is the shared service center that will be leveraging this platform that we're busy working on. The next slide talks mainly now on the issue of the transversal shared services that we are busy working on, which obviously indicates in terms of exactly what are we doing to make sure that we minimize the the manual processes. So we are driving automation of the currently manual processes just to make sure that everything is completely automated, where we do things in a seamless, removing paperwork to a paperless situation. So replacing all, eliminating all the duplications, ultimately lowering the overall cost of support functions across the whole Transnet and all ODs. So this process, obviously, what we are doing now is to focus mainly on the finance processes, which we intend to start or going live on this, somewhere towards the end of September. So the intention here, again, as I indicated earlier on when I gave the background in terms of our IT data service contract, is to leverage on the cloud services as well as to make sure that whatever license that we have at the moment, we all use them in a very effective and efficient way to minimize cost, to make sure that we run this organization in an efficient way. So this shared services from our side, we think that it's going to be a deal breaker in the sense that it's going to assist us in making sure that we eliminate all the duplications and we do more with less in terms of consolidation of all the applications and services across the organization. The next slide, obviously I've spoken about consolidations. So in making sure that this digital transformation is realized and achieved, one area that we are looking at now is to go into the standardization of all the softwares that we have at the moment to say, if we do have licenses within the organization, can we have a single license contract that can be used by all ODs to make sure that at least we leverage on the economies of scale, just to repeat myself again. So these licenses obviously on themselves have got all different modules and components that will assist us in terms of realizing the digital transformation strategy that we are busy working on. And obviously these licenses, we're talking about Microsoft as well as SAP licenses that we are going to be using for all these HR as well as finance modules when we do the digital transformation strategy. So in short, Chair, I think that is what I have to share with you in terms of what we've achieved up to so far. There are so many projects and so many initiatives that we're working on, but I thought maybe we should just share with you in terms of what we've achieved and the work that we are doing in this space. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stanley. You've got 5 minutes. Go quickly. Sandy?
Hello?
You've got 5 minutes.
Yes, yes.
Your turn.
Okay. Good morning once more. From a legal compliance and regulatory perspective, the highlights we can point out would be the fact that we've been working closely with the Zonda Commission from a information sharing and to easily facilitate the flow of information, we had provided them with office space so that they can easily access whoever or whatever information they require from us. In addition to that, we've had various successes, especially with the SIU, from a civil recoveries as well as anti-dissipation or freezing of either assets or pension monies from the affected or implicated employees. And some of the reports, you'd have seen them recently. And furthermore, from a civil recovery point of view, we got to a point of signing an agreement with regiments to recover an amount in excess of about 700 million flowing from some of the monies that were paid to them. And the monies would be payable by the end of during October. From a legal perspective, we previously reported on the pensioners class action matter. Happily, we can report that we have reached a settlement agreement with the pensioners, and we're at a point of implementing the settlement, which would require that we amend the pension rules to effect some of the positive benefits that will flow to the pensioners. And from a litigation point of view, there's one matter that it's been bugging us. It's around the litigation that we're having with both Sasol and Total. We've engaged them to assess the possibilities of settling those matters outside of court, given the long-standing relationships we've had with both entities that go beyond the current litigation. The matter is coming up soon, and we're hoping that sanity will prevail, and then we can settle the matter to preserve our relationships. And from a regulatory point of view, there's an issue that we're currently engaging the Department of Transport, which relates to the railway safety permit fees that we pay to the railway safety regulator. We have requested to engage with the Department of Transport simply because we've consistently raised the issue that we found the fees payable to them to be beyond the realm of reality, or even if we use inflation as a benchmark. So those discussions are being set up. So thank you very much. That's all from a legal compliance and regulatory perspective.
Thank you. Yolisa, can you start?
Thank you, Kosha. Good morning to everybody on the call. Sydney, may I ask that you go to slide 48, which speaks to our Transnet Africa strategy? In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say that the rest of the slides prior to this one are actually a continuation of what my colleague Andrew Shaw has presented. I just want to speak to our Africa strategy. As you may or may not be aware, we have a deliberate effort of playing in the African markets. Our strategy basically is on geographic expansions into new markets within the African region, but with a special focus on the SADC market, cross-border volumes in terms of our rails, rail volumes that we are transporting within the region, export sales, which looks at positioning our engineering, Transnet engineering organization. Our focus in the SADC, if you look at the map here, we look at the Maputo corridor, which connects Eswatini in South Africa to Mozambique. Mozambique presents a very nice opportunity for us. We are seeing some investments coming from the U.S. in particular in that country. We've got the North-South corridor, which links SADC countries as the prime regional trade route, providing connections to all the regional corridors and ports, allowing for flexibility and competition. This corridor starts in the DRC and terminates in Durban. Again, you know the challenges within that corridor. There's a bit of disjointment in terms of those operations as well as the planning thereof. And we think with our experience as Transnet, we are well positioned to play that integration role. Then you have the East-West corridor, which is known as the Trans-Kalahari corridor. We're looking at the railway line, which mirrors the existing Trans-Kalahari highway or corridor. which links Botswana to Walvis Bay, but it stretches 1,900 kilometers from Walvis Bay through Windhoek, Gaborone, and Johannesburg to Pretoria in South Africa. We operate a complementary system of ports which supports the landlocked member states and provide maritime connectivity to both landside and waterside. SADC has 7 countries that have ports and transport holds, or handles rather, around 22% of transshipment traffic for Angola, Namibia, Mauritius, Tanzania, and the Indian Ocean island countries. Next slide, please. In terms of the impact of COVID, I mean, that impact is unknown, but we think that, I mean, we can talk to some of what we've seen playing out in the supply chain market, industry or space, rather. The operational constraints are expected to lead to delivery delays. We've seen this in the road freight logistics, where we've seen over thousands of trucks that were stuck in the borders, congestion and a higher freight rate as a result of demand. However, not all these segments will be impacted equally. Companies that serve e-commerce are seeing increasing activity as consumers opt for online shopping for essentials, whilst those that serve other sectors such as the auto and consumer goods will see a downturn. This has already been presented by some of my colleagues. Another mitigant is the record low fuel prices, which should provide some relief to transport operators. Overall, the uncertainty will exert a downward pressure on revenues, as we've already said. The impact is severe for small players. Small trucking businesses are being severely hit because they tend not to have backup plans that are as robust as the bigger players, the recovery plans, or intermittent operation plans. The lack of technology as well is playing itself out in small trucking businesses, which need to follow stringent health guidelines. For example, the disinfecting deliveries further complicated their responses. Top players have also been hit just as hard. In April, both DHL and Shiva Logistics declared force majeure, a clause that allows contracts to be declared null and void due to acts of God or other unexpected circumstances. There has been a single company that has been sparred from this. And other companies' credit metrics are likely to deteriorate, triggering downgrades, as has already been seen in the sector. And, of course, several freight and logistics investments have been placed on hold indefinitely as companies try to recover. Next slide, please. Continuing on the impact, I'm just going to speak to one or two bullets under each of these. Total container volumes handled at Chinese ports dropped by 10.1% in the first months of 2020. We all know that this is where COVID-19 started. Agility Logistics reports had considerable constraints to ocean freight around the world, impacting both key exporters, like Brazil, China, India, Mexico, as well as importers like the European Union. According to DHL, weak demand will continue to affect routes between Asia, Europe, and the United States, and the rest of the likes. And consequently, additional blank sailings are expected in the coming months. So it's a slow recovery, even though countries are starting to see increased activities. Land freight, unlike ocean and air transport, land transport has generally remained partially available globally, as roads have remained in operation, except in countries under severe lockdown. Trucking capacity is strained because of the additional demand for their services, as well as the restrictions on of transporting under lockdown. Other economic sectors that require land transport, such as manufacturing, are generally not at full capacity because of the lockdown. As a result, spot road freight rates have fallen in some markets, and overall demand for rail services has grown because of the higher cargo freight rates, blank sailings, and longer transit times for trucks. Air freight, there was a fall of 19% in March due to the sharp reduction in passenger flights. But there is some slow movement in that regard in terms of freight for essential services and goods. As shippers and governments turn to air cargo for essential goods, air freight rates have increased as a result of demand. I've personally seen the rates of repatriation flights for a single ticket. Mid-April saw an increase in capacity as well as recovery in volumes transported, although they are still down year on year. Next slide, please. I wanted to spend a little bit of time on this. I think the last two slides are the most important in my presentation. I mean, in terms of the African continent, we're set to suffer the largest ever recession in 2020, Africa at large. The downturn of 2020 will be driven by multiple headwinds, such as reduced international travel. We're still not open to international travel as a country. Trade and investment flows, low energy and non-energy commodity prices, disrupted global value chains, weak demand in major export markets, as well as domestic and regional restrictions on business activity and trade. The rebound will obviously be modest across the board, and most countries will emerge from the crisis with two things in particular, weak currencies, as well as large stocks of debt. South Africa will be burdened by tight credit markets and low levels of private investment, high unemployment, and labor militancy, and the probable re-emerging of electricity constraints, amongst other things which we've already seen at play. As focus is shifted from short-term damage control to longer-term resilience, supply chains are likely to move in new and more geographically dispersed directions. We are anticipating the following trends: homeward bound, some reshoring and stockpiling, countries going back to their, companies going back to their countries of origin to do business, regionalization for some offering nearshoring opportunities, globalization and mixed approach by diversifying supply chains away from a single country to a region. If I just go to the block on the right-hand side, these are the focus of GDP pre-COVID-19 and as well as to date. I mean, if you look at South Africa, the pre-COVID-19 forecast was sitting at just maybe 3%, and as a result of COVID-19, 14th of July to be exact, we're looking at just -7.78 around about there. Now, what we're expecting is that it will take us another 4 years in the fourth quarter of 2024 for us to be at a GDP growth that was prior COVID-19. And even at that time, Chair, we will still be at the GDP of Q3 in 2013, which means when we recover Q4 2024, we still would have lost 7 years of GDP growth. Quite an interesting figure to have a look at. It speaks to the severity of and the impact of COVID-19 to our market. Next slide, please. This is the last slide, Chair, which speaks to the foreign investments. This has been alluded by my colleague who presented earlier. We are anticipating that FDI flows to the sub-Saharan markets will fall by 30%. Investors may want to focus more on their home markets than overseas ventures. The scale of post-pandemic FDI rebound will depend on the strength of the domestic and global economic recoveries and on commodity price trends, which is pivotal for SSA, given that most countries depend on hydrocarbons, minerals, agricultural raw materials to drive growth and exports. Diverse economies will be the most protected from FDI slump. In terms of oil and gas produce, in SSA, producers face the biggest peak leading to a loss of earnings and new project delays, which could persist into the medium term. And then mineral-dependent economies faced a mixed outlook depending on their commodity mix. Gold and platinum producers will suffer the least. And again, in terms of our regulatory environment, it poses a challenge for the mining sector, especially in South Africa and Tanzania. Agricultural prospects are better, although investments will continue to be impeded by strict land use rules and regulations. Investment in services such as telecoms and banking will continue to be resilient, or rather be more resilient, and with the exception of tourism, as we know that even though the market is open, it's a slow uptake. Energy, especially renewables, remain an attractive sector. The last point, Chair, is about Nigeria's inflows almost halved because of tighter rules as oil and gas companies divert attention to more investor-friendly locations, while Ethiopian inflows fell by a quarter, owing to heightened political tensions. For South Africa, South Africa therefore regained top spot in the regional FDI league in 2019, despite inflows dipping by 15% to $4.6 billion. So I think that takes me to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
how can you do people?
Okay, yeah. I'm just going to do one slide, Chair. I'm just going to work with this. So, honourable members, this just indicates how we functioned in the context of the COVID epidemic. I think the CFO has spoken to the dynamics, and both Andrew and Yodi have spoken to how the thing has hit us. So this just gives an indication, and to give time to my colleagues, we can deal with the details later. We created a special way of working as a company to deal with that impact. And in the above box, we just indicate how we reconciled in order to know. Remember that we operated as an essential services. We operated throughout the level of lockdown. So we had to operate in an environment where certain cargoes were permitted, certain cargoes were not. We had to operate in an environment where certain business operations were permitted and certain business operations were not. And within a transit environment, we had to permit certain workers, and certain workers had to be at home, especially at the level 5 environment. And incrementally, we brought them back to work as we went. But throughout that process, we had to run an environment in which we had to ensure safe operations. And at the beginning of the lockdown, one of the challenges was just getting accessibility to PPEs, protective equipment, let alone getting it properly and all of that. So that's the scenario in which we created this mechanism of work. And we just wanted to alert Parliament, this is how we organized ourselves to work. And we then looked into how we balance the interests of the customers, which would have been the people that have permitted cargoes that needs to move to keep the economy going, to keep livelihoods going, with the availability of people on our side. We always had to reconcile that with what is permitted, what is not, and we can go into detail of that later. And then we had to then organize our operations in that context. And we created a decision flow that we call the Corona Loop, where we looked at what was permitted as per government decision-making. We looked at which customers want to move and where did we have sufficient volumes, because certain cargoes could move, certain cargoes could not. Then we then organized our operations accordingly in terms of that. Maybe without wasting time, honorable members, I would say one of the things that hit us very hard was the issue of the unavailability of certain types of workers who were critical in operations. So one of the things that we've worked hard over the past periods to do is, one, to understand the risk profile of our employees. So we've identified the over 60 workers. Not all of them are necessarily unavailable, but we had to risk-rate them and find those that can work and those that can work. Some are coming back to work, but some can't come to work. And then we had to look at our chronic workers, and the same thing with chronic. Some chronic workers can be brought back to work, but some cannot be brought back to work. So we've been doing this risk rating, and it's an ongoing process in the company. The difficulty is that some of those workers were actually some of our most experienced workers and most critical both to operations themselves and to the supervision of operations. The second issue is that we've had to then develop new ways of work as we term them, to ensure safe operations, to ensure efficiency, and to be able to deal with the availability of employees as they were available at the time. And it taught us certain efficiencies in terms of how we work, and I think some of them were institutionalized them into the new normal, into how we work overall as a company. Some quick lessons that we've learned in the process is that we've learned how to zone the teams to make sure that different teams of work operate without impacting on each other, so that there's no transmissibility between the teams. Those are the things that we learned at the time that we're continuing with. We understood how to manage shared spaces. We introduced active facility management in the business as a way of working. Obviously, we've institutionalized remote working in the company. The bulk of our employees who can, usually those outside of operations, are working remotely. And we've improved the digital backbone of the company. The CIO spoke to that, to enable that remote work to go. We've become much better at the provision of PPE, and obviously we've then improved the PPE to deal with COVID-related risks, but as a company, we always had to deal with safety issues. So we've always had a PPE a portfolio to manage, but we've obviously bolstered it in terms of that. And we also had to engage with workers in a different way, both to deal with safety concerns, but also to embed the new ways of work and ensure that they are complied with across the company. We also had to enhance our relationship with the union representatives. So the recognized unions have worked very closely with us, and we credit them with ensuring that the company continued working throughout the period of lockdown and all of that. So in a nutshell, those are some of the lessons. We can go further on them later on if needs be, that we dealt with in the context of a COVID approach. Of course, there's other people management issues I'm not touching on that are quite important that just related to, as I close, I'll refer to them. So some of the issues we've done is introduce a lifestyle audit a process in the company and adopted the policy along those lines. We can talk about that later when we have time. We've obviously worked to reorganize the company, make it more agile, to reduce the layers of the company and make it more business focused, and the different operating divisions that we'll speak have been reconfigured to become more ops focused companies and less head office centered companies. And of course, as Stanley did refer to, we're working to deal with consequence management of those people that have been found wanting as part of the various investigations that have happened in the company. I will end the chair in the interest of time. Thanks.
Chair, I've just asked Velile, who runs the Transnet port terminals, and he's only going to do one slide, so we can finish at 11:30. And can you go to slide 117, Emmanuel? Yeah. Okay, Velile, can you go?
Honourable members and Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I thought I would hone in on this slide because it perhaps talks to two issues. The challenges we had last year in the ports that talked to congestion and the Cape and in Durban on the land side because of the industrial action that we experienced last year around this time, where there was great unhappiness in the industry and the agricultural sector was highly impacted by lack of activity in the port occasioned by the industrial action. For this year, we were well prepared to stop the repeat of what happened last year. We acquired new equipment, which is now being installed. We increased the number of teams that work in the ports. We introduced new systems for receiving trucks in the ports so we can manage the flow throughout the 24 hours to make sure that the supply chain in the country can benefit from what the country and Transnet has provided in the way of assets that operate 24 hours, and yet the industry is only using 50% of the available time. While we're making the progress in that sphere, we were hit by COVID. And as you can see, that one of the hardest hit facility that was hit was the port of Cape Town, where we saw delays of up to 21 days of vessels waiting outside. And the slide that you're seeing, the bottom left-hand side of the slide, shows how the interventions that the previous presenter spoke about in terms of how we manage the reduction of infections, and also how we started building teams and utilizing all available resources in the country. We've seen how the reduction in delays has happened. What we are also pleased to mention is that our recovery rate on COVID is 96%. Sad to say, though, that we have lost 12 individuals, and for that we are highly saddened. But also what's important is that all the landings, compressed landings that we got from the port of Cape Town, it was like learning to fix an aeroplane as you fly it. We were able to extend most of those landings to the port of Muha and to the port of Durban, while the rate of infections in those ports were much higher than what we experienced in the early days in Cape Town, the learnings that we got in Cape Town has stood out in good stead, and we have been able to implement those a lot more faster in the ports of Nuha and the ports of Durban. The protocols are now entrenched. We are a lot more vigilant in our environment. We are also now asking our employees to extend into their communities the learnings from the workplace so that we can keep the rate of infections a lot lower than much lower where actually required to be. So we're very pleased with what has happened. The challenge still remains to get the industry as a whole to collaborate with the port. Simply because we are the first and the last mile in the supply chain, our issues are a lot more pronounced, but what we're doing now is getting the industry to collaborate with us so that we can collaborate from all the nodes in the supply chain, from the farm to the port, that we can synchronize our planning, that we can utilize all available resources to make sure that the supply chain works in a way that promotes economic activity. Maybe I should leave it at that point, Portia. My 5 minutes is up.
Thank you. Chair, I just wanted to end on the note of people. Is that as of last Thursday, we had about 4 employees in hospital. 3, 4, 5 of them were quarantining. And since we started testing, we've tested 2,595, but that's exclusive of people who've then also tested, our employees who've tested in the private system. 2,582 were positive, and 2,010 have since recovered. We have sadly had 35 people who have died as of yesterday, by the weekend. So it's been a hard period, but I also thought that Velile presenting port terminals is to end on the point that he started, which was that they are the port terminals is the first mile, the first point and the last mile of the logistics system, and it affects virtually everyone. And we felt this in COVID when it was struggling, that it had a direct impact on increasing the pressure in the system. And as port terminals was able to turn the corner, we could feel relief. Thank you very much, Chair. The rest of the slides we have available, and also the OD CEOs are available to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, CEO. I think now we'll go to the members to engage the presentation. I think we are ready. We'll start with Honorable Mpumlwana. Honorable Mpumlwana.
Yes, can you hear me?
Thank you, I can hear you now. Can you speak?
You know, I have not seen such an assignment even at university. When you have to go through almost 150 pages in a short space of time, and you have to prepare and prepare questions. I only hope that maybe next time they will be able to give us this presentation on time so that we are able to participate fairly. Can you still hear me? Hello? Hello?
Yes.
You're audible, quite clear.
Oh, good. I just want to hide this old face, you know. Okay. Now, I just want a few questions. Perhaps I can come back later on. The first one relates to what we read in the papers, basically, about arson, particularly in the trains and other assets. And I just want to find that
sorry, Honorable Mpumlwana. We are losing you. I think there is a problem with your connection. Can Honorable Mvumlwana? Honorable Mvumlwana? I think we'll leave Honorable Mvumlwana while he's trying to... Honorable Mvumlwana?
To mitigate the risk of such... related to that is the question of... hello?
Yes, we are struggling to get you properly. You have just disappeared for a couple of seconds. Can you...
Yes. Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we are struggling to hear you.
You can't hear me? Yes.
Unless you can start...
I can hear you. Can you hear me? I'm not trying, I'm ill. You can't hear me. You can hear me. Can you see me? Can you... Hello?
Can you
hear me?
I don't know. Chair, perhaps if the honourable member takes his picture off and just speaks, it'll be clearer.
Yeah, take your picture off.
Take my picture off. Is it clearer now?
Yes,
is it clearer?
Yes, try.
Okay. Can I'm asking relating to the ASOL. What we read in the paper, I just want to find out what measures are they taking to limit that, to mitigate the risk. Secondly, related to that, how safe are passengers in the train? They're being marked, they're being robbed on a daily basis. Nobody talked about it. Thirdly, I just want to find on the side of the legal people, if you can share, not necessarily now, give us this information, perhaps send this information to us, the civil matters that are presently before court and those that they are discussing outside court, if they can give us some information or details about them. Thirdly, can you hear me, Mr. Chairman? Am I still with you? Hello?
Hello? Still with us. You are still with us. You are still with us. We hear you now. Just
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thirdly, I just want to find on the question of transformation. How far has Transnet transformed us from 1994 today? In terms of the percentage and in terms of the race and in terms of position, as well as...
Sorry, Honorable Mvumlwana, just to help you. We are dealing with Transnet, not with PRASA. PRASA is a total different... Yeah.
Okay, no, I'm sorry. I want to withdraw anything related to that, because I thought that when you so PRASA is I'm sorry, Transnet relates to the port and the port only, not the rail. I don't understand.
We'll have to come back.
Let me step down and check again, because what I've read here in this volume of 150 pages, talks. I've seen some trains in here, and so I don't know. Are you saying that they are not concerned with passengers? They are concerned with the goods only.
Okay, let's come back to you. Let's go to Honorable Kashalia.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, Transnet is effectively a monopoly, and despite some profitability, it's failing to do its job, which is to provide public goods and enable our economy effectively and at a competitive price.
and to lower the cost of doing business in South Africa. In respect of this, let me point out a few things. Rail is inefficient and expensive. For example, dolomite from the Northern Cape costs to transport 609 rands per ton versus 256 rands per ton by road. The turnaround time at Durban Port is three times longer than at other large ports, and it's also prohibitively expensive. Thirdly, the cost of transporting a 20-foot container from Cape Town reached $2,000 5 years ago, this which was more than double the average of other high-income economies. The debt in transport sits at, in terms of outstanding loans, at 122.5 billion rand, and a portion of that, 3.8 billion, is guaranteed by government. Now, in view of this, I'd be keen to understand what plans there are to restructure, what plans there are to investigate and mitigate and address the issues that I referred to earlier. Thirdly, have any investors or suitors been approached by the company, given that we're operating in an environment where FDI is expected to fall by 30%? And lastly, how much capital has been raised of late? That would be indicative of the traction that has been achieved. Now, if you are capping capital costs at 8% of revenue, and revenue has been hit heavily by COVID and is falling, continually falling, in line with severe dive in GDP projections, how are you going to deal with this situation? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kashalia, followed by Honorable Malinga. Honorable Malinga. Honorable Malinga is not on. Let's go to Honorable Maotwe.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Can you hear me, Chairperson?
Yes, we can hear you properly.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the colleagues and to the Transnet officials that are here this morning. Chair, normally what you would say to us as members of this particular committee is that when you've got issues, we don't need to write to you like I used to do. Write letters to you asking for clarity or anything relating to the entity. So I've sought to write letters to both the minister and the chairperson of the board, and none of those letters were responded to. So before I engage today's presentation, I just want to ask the chairperson of the board, because he's here. I'm not sure if the minister is still here, to respond to the letter. And the last one is, how much has been paid so far to MNS, and when is the contract ending? And then in relation to Transnet assets, we've seen an advert from the CEO of Transnet, the group CE, Ms. Toshia Devi, relating to the assessment, or rather the expression of interest in the ownership, the lease, and the partnership, where customers are invited to show such interest. So our question is, what exactly are you intending to do? Is that an attempt to sell Transnet to private owners? And to the minister, are you going to stop any attempt by any of the Transnet officials to sell this strategic asset of the state to private owners? Now, coming back to the presentation that was made today, so those are the questions that we've written letters to. That was on the 3rd of August. Today, we are sitting in this meeting, is the 2nd of September. A month later, the letter has not been responded to. So I'm hoping to get questions answered here today, because these officials received these letters a month ago. Now, in terms of engaging on the presentation that was done today, Chair, it is my view that this meeting is premature, in that Transnet has not yet released its financial statement. The Group CEO was saying they are to release that by the end of this month, which is the 30th of September. So if you look at all that has been said, it's not for this past financial year. I mean, if you look at slide 7, which would have perhaps given us an indication of where Transnet is going in terms of historical performance, it stops at 2018-2019. So nothing has been said about 2019-2020, and then what then is the projection, or rather the estimate for 2020-2021. So honestly speaking, we've sat here for 1.5 hours listening to absolutely nothing in terms of performance of Transnet. And I'm begging through you, Chairperson, that Transnet needs to come back once they've released that those statements, so that we can actually engage on their performance of 2019-2020, and then looking into 2020-2021. And so on the ICT initiatives, the CIO presented quite a few initiatives that they want to embark on. Now my question is, how are all these initiatives going to improve efficiency? And what are we hoping to save in terms of rand value? How much are we going to save in embarking onto all these initiatives that your department is going to be running with? And then the T systems and Gijima, that's an old issue. And I'm surprised that only now in June 2020 we're only signing the contract. And so it means that T-Systems have just been executing duties to Transnet, even though their contract expired 2 to 3 years ago. So why did it take us so long, besides the court cases and everything else, but why did it take us so long for Transnet to sign that agreement? And on that note as well, Chair, Transnet has got an agreement normally that the laptops get recycled or upgraded every 3 years. Is that still the case? If so, those old laptops that have been returned, what are they doing with it? Who are they sending it to? Because in the past, there were rumors of those laptops being donated to some foundation. So we want to know what happens to those laptops. In terms of governance, you spoke very briefly about governance. It was like a by-the-way issue, even though Transnet is in deep, deep trouble with all their governance issues. So we need more detail in terms of governance. It can't be that you get one slide, two slides on governance when that entity is muddled with lots of governance issues. But for the purpose of this meeting, how many employees have appeared before the Zondo Commission? And how many more are yet to appear before the Zondo Commission? And what are we doing to protect whistleblowers that we don't see the situation of Eskom, for example, coming into play in Transnet? On the presentation that was done, I think is the business development, I forgot your name, my apologies. You're telling us about Africa strategy. I mean, Sisi, you're taking us 8 years back. 8 years back, we're discussing Africa strategy. If you go and Google that, you'll see that Brian Molefe and Malusi Gigaba shipped Wagen from Transnet Engineering way back in 2012. So we've long passed this plan of yours that we developed when we have 8 years back. So we are now at, you must tell us what is the intention now with TIH. Is TIH still on board? Because TIH was looking at beyond Africa. We had a contact or rather negotiations with countries like your Colombia, your Chile, out of Africa. So please, what are we reversing the gains that were made by Transnet? Like taking us back to Africa strategy, which is only even speaking about the SADC region. I mean, we've got contracts with Botswana, with Mozambique, Malawi. What exactly are you still doing here? Because what we need to do is just to keep the momentum of a repeat order. But we've captured this market already. So don't come and tell us about something that was done 8 years ago. About what has been done. So my question is, what project did you find in this financial year with revenue generating contracts? So which countries did you sign the contracts with? Who are you supplying locomotives to and wagons and passenger coaches to that you sign? And how much? What is the value, rand value that you sign those contracts for? For example, the Ghana project, how far is it? Have you signed the contract? What is in the implementation? Nigeria, Senegal, and all those, Guinea, for example, Mali, all those projects, what's happening with them? With the COVID-19, I'm not getting anything from you, Media and Business Development, to say, with COVID-19 right now, we know that we are disabled in terms of flying, trying to reach out to those international customers. But what are you doing internally to build capacity? We've got the Trans-Africa locomotive that was unveiled 3-4 years ago. But if you look at, and we pride ourselves and say this was built by Africans for Africa in Africa, but if you look at the high-ticket items in that locomotive, like, for example, the engines, those were still taken from international supply. So why are we not now trying to recapacitate the research and development entity within Transnet to develop our own engines, for example, to develop our own traction motors from scratch while we are still in COVID? We've got young engineers there at CSIR, very dynamic, very agile, very energetic, with inspiration. So why aren't you capitalizing on them to say, for us to capture this international market, we need to build our own capacity. We need to manufacture our own wheels and not just get components and then we join components together and we claim that we are building wheels. We're not building wheels, for example. So what is it that you are doing to then capitalize on the building internal capacity to address some of these issues? And lastly, can you refrain from talking about Africa strategy? It's just embarrassment. Just forget about that weight and talk about something else because we're just reviewing the gains that we made. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Maotwe. Can we go to Honorable Thierry? Honorable Thierry?
Thanks, Chair. Allow me to speak without my video on. I'm struggling with network and with the issue of load shedding also. But let me start by greeting honorable members present today and the minister, also officials from the department and the board of Transnet with their executives. Chair, let me join colleagues in on the issue of presentation. It's too long and it seems like we are in a workshop and the time is not on our side. Then I'll suggest next time we need to focus and have a presentation. If of course it was an overview of what is Transnet, but I believe next time when they come, maybe we need to focus on a specific department or an area. If it's freight rail, then we focus on that aspect, or if we are talking about issues of finances, then we focus on that. But also, let me just go and have a bite on few things that I think I need clarity on. Chairperson, Transnet has good stories to tell and bad. but in most of, even in the presentation, they could not tell us more about their good stories. I've read in one of media channels or through the social media that Transnet has got a program of localizing manufacturers and suppliers. On that basis, I wanted them to explain further and tell that good story and make our fellow South Africans to be part of it. In that program, there's no much details of those who are small business who want to venture and trade with Transnet. Can they further explain what is the program? How can you access? How can you be part as a business person locally who stays in South Africa to venture into their space? How do they, for example, how do they monitor you or have a time for you as a program for you to meet the standards of what they are in need of? So I need more of their clarity and making South Africans to be part of that localizing and manufacturing of their supply needs that they need. Secondly, Chair, we are observing or on a daily basis, we have the issue of cable theft. I believe they deal with the cables. How is their strategy in terms of curbing the issue of cable theft into their rails? So on that fact, we understand or it also disturbs the program or the business of the day once they are having a theft on their side. So can they elaborate further? How deep does it affect the entity so far, and what is the strategy in shaping that? I've seen in their presentation, one was presenting about the in terms of COVID-19, they've been affected by the fact of personnel, especially they even signaled it out or their personnel or officials who are aging could not come, and it also affected their operations. But when we went for an oversight chair, it was very interesting when we saw young engineers, young employees were there on site. Then why does it have to affect them so much while they are having a program to skill or transfer skills from older generations to the younger generation? Then it means, was it on the face value for us to see that you have a program of young engineers, or indeed you are training them? If, to my understanding, you are training them to a point that you won't have a crisis, you won't have a problem to leave young people that you are transferring skills and allow older people to exist. Why, if they've wrote that in their slides to say they've been affected by personnel or employees who are older. So on that basis, I want them to clarify us, or maybe they are referring to a section where they don't have young people whom they are transferring skills or not. Let me pause the chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Thierry. Honorable Inkosi Buthelezi. In English, not there. Honorable Umede. Abu Umede.
Sir, thank you.
Yebo.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, sir.
Thank you. Greetings to all members. Members of the board and the Transnet staff. Chair, I would like to join others, but not in a kind of a negative sense. It's a long time having not met with Transnet. And obviously, we undermined the fact that the document was going to be voluminous. the time the report came, we could not read and synthesize and prepare for the right questions that will take the entity forward. So I will request, especially the other part of the years that are not included in the report, it would have been nice to have the final performance of the entity rather than be given the performance of the previous performance, and we judge the entity on the matter of the previous performance. As well as, Chair, not that I'm sympathetic, but I want to understand that the board is 2 years, and they've almost, if we take...
Whoever will commit. Honorable Kumete? Honorable Kumete? I think we lost Honorable Kumete. We will have to go back to him because he was still in platform. Can we go to Honorable Kwangwa? Honorable Kwangwa? Okay.
No. Hello, Chair.
Oh, wait.
No, man, I've got load shed. I have load shed in this side.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
So I was trying to...
Okay. Continue.
I'm trying to hotspot. Can you hear me then?
Yes, you will have to cover the time you have. You might have missed some other issues to ask. Therefore, you will have to take the minute you cut.
Yeah, Chair, all what I was trying to say is I will request that we need to have a very good meeting with Transnet, especially each of the members that will in fact be presenting. We ask them questions after each and every presentation so that at least we make a meaningful contribution that the entity will take home and make sure that it gets inputted for them to perform better in their place of work. Chair, I'm not sure. I was saying that it looks as if most of the work of this the current board has in fact been overshadowed by the pandemic. So as a result, there will be those challenges. However, if I may say that Velile, he underestimated, because the last time, I'll be happy to get the right figures at the end of the day, that he underestimated the impact of COVID within. You know, when reading, we are told of that there were 448 with 8 deaths. May their soul rest in peace. But the final figures given by the CEO is about 2,500 people affected, as well as 37 people that have passed on. So there is that kind of a discrepancy which in fact has not been clearly put. May their soul rest in peace for the 35 people that in fact have lost their lives. Andrew Shou Cheng, is I've got a feeling that the 5.4 in terms of the global growth has been kind of overestimated. With the current situation that we have, I did doubt that we may get to that point of not unless we are given the assessment that what are the indications they have that they think we will reach to that point. It's positive to think that if we go to level one, things will be free, but the COVID will still be there, and many other people may still be vulnerable in a sense. So if we do our projections, it's better that we do our projections understanding that the COVID is there, we may still get affected in a kind of a situation. I will agree with Honorable Maute in the sense that it has taken time to finalize the matter between DGMA and the T-System. But my worry is, what were the issues of concern? Because we don't want to end up with the thinking that there was a kind of nepotism, there was a kind of favoritism on the side of a T-System that in fact was initially appointed in a sense. Another thing, Che, is I'm trying to reconcile the report we are getting of the performance. It's fairly acceptable. I'm saying fairly acceptable. But to me, there is, I think, two times that the entity has been kind of downgraded. You know, I fear this downgrading thing. You know, we've got the whole country downgraded, and now they are with the entities. That it's now downgraded, and there is as well many issues with DINEL. So it looks as if now the entities are now becoming vulnerable. And with the 43 in depth as well, I was saying that at times the performance, I'm aware that I've seen that the entity has in fact some guarantees expiring in 2019, which is commendable in a sense. And we must give due diligence where it's due. And thank you very much to the entity for not worrying treasury and go there, ask for money. You can still be sustainable and do your work. I think that's commendable. But please, let's try, if ever there is a way, let's try and go lesser than 43. And I'm worried that if we are beginning to be visited by these people that are downgrading us, we are getting a little bit much more vulnerable in a sense. I've read as well something that says, which in fact may not be the answer now, because the years we are given, the last performance, we don't have it. But I would be interested to know that the equity and the assets, the entity is in fact projecting an increase of 145 billion. Unfortunately, then I may not get an answer now because the information is not there. But otherwise, Chair, other than the transport system, because that's the one that has more challenge with the entity, the challenge is there. I'll be happy to get more information on the transport system. And thank you very much that the police, whoever is they are doing some strides in terms of arresting those people who are interrupting the transportation of oil and all those. For now, Chair, let me wait there and let's see what is going to happen. Otherwise, I'll come back, Chair. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Honorable Kumede. After Honorable Kumede, again, can I check Honorable Kwangwa is present? Seemingly, he is not here. Honorable Komani.
Chair, apologies for Honorable Komani. She's attending the public health service. PSA, the Polo Committee.
Okay. Honorable Koman is not here. Honorable Mkwanas. Honorable Mkwanas.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I hope I'm audible.
You are audible.
Thank you, Honorable Portfolio Chairperson, Honorable Members, my colleagues, Minister, Transport Chairperson, the Board, the CEO, and her ex-co. First, Chair, I think I have to, I must follow what Honorable Kumede said. We appreciate and acknowledge the progress done thus far. For me, especially on the recoveries, we've been, as this portfolio committee, talking on the recoveries on the issue of the Zondo Commission and all that related matters. But for me, Jay, I have about two or three questions. Maybe I will sound otherwise. To the board chairperson, Honorable Portfolio Chair, from the financials report, do you see Transnet being able to sustain itself and also able to deliver on its mandate as alluded by the Portfolio Chair in the beginning, especially on the economic growth development for the country? Talking to the skills development, employment, and also on the capacity of the state. But also, Chair, I remember when we visited Transnet, we really emphasized on the issue of saying, what is it that we can do to capacitate SOEs to venture with each other, to make sure that they venture into each other, in partnering in making sure that they produce a better quality for the development of the state. So if especially the board chairperson can give us a hope day to say on the onward look, are they considering that, and what is this assessment going forward? Secondly, Chair, is the issue of infrastructural maintenance. We've seen, I think, part of what Honorable Advocate Mbulwane was talking about is the issue of infrastructural development and maintenance, but also the risk assessment plan to make sure that we protect the infrastructure. But also we make sure that infrastructure is not damaged. We have read in the news that there's a lot of damage in the infrastructure of Lokunjeni, of Transnet. Can they talk to their infrastructural maintenance and talk to their risk management plan going forward? Lastly, Chair, I think I'll be wasting your time on the assets. I was covered by the honourable member before. Thank you very much for now. I will come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mkwanazi. Honourable Mare. Honourable Mare. He is not here. Okay, Honorable Swap. Also, Honorable Swap, you're not here. Then let's go to the last name here. It's Honorable Swap.
Did you call me?
Okay. Who's that?
Bumlwana, did you call Bumlwana?
No, no, no. Oh, do you want to come, Honorable Bumlwana? You still have your space. If you have something to say.
No, no, no. I just... I just wanted to find out on the if it was possible. I know these people don't have perhaps all the statistics with them now. I really want to thank them for the good presentation they've given, although it's quite, it would be better if they brought it much earlier. If they can inform you, Honorable Chair, write you a letter, inform you about the civil matters that are before court now and the issues related to the matters that they tackle outside court. I think I did raise the other thing of transformation, which I think you will they will probably answer related to the suppliers as well as the employees. Lastly, I wanted to find out on the question of foreign investment, on the question of expansion rate, what problems do they encounter in this corridor related to the fact that related to the foreign laws that they have, how are they affected by them in their expansion? That is all, sir. Hello?
Thank you, Honorable Bumlwana. Are you done?
Yes, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Honorable Shabalala.
Okay, thank you so much, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation, Chair, that we received. It was highly technical, and I think really the department, rather Transnet, has done fairly well or reasonably well given the circumstances. But insofar as the presentation is really, really good, and I feel that it needs us to engage with it more time, past members in our own time as well. As technical as it might be, I'll try to just seek some clarities where they can clarify me on other matters so that one can have a better understanding of what they're trying to relate to us. So in this instance, one is really impressed, but to say that one looks forward to receiving the financial statement, as in when they are available in this instance, but it doesn't really necessarily stifle us in terms of us doing oversight work, because work it is continuing in Transnet. Chairperson, let me raise one very important issue before I come to the technical things that I did highlight on the presentation. The issue of the infrastructure, it is really, really a problem. I don't know how to coin it, whether what type of a fault is this of corrupt elements that are taking place. But this is infrastructure that our country has fought for. This is an infrastructure that our country really needs. This is an infrastructure that services more largely around our working class citizens, the poor and the vulnerable, that needs this infrastructure. Now, you would appreciate that with COVID-19, because there was lockdown, people were at home, but now as the easing of it when level 2, there are persons who are utilizing perhaps that needs the rail away and so forth, and the fact that this infrastructure, they've been largely served, it affects them. So I want to know how to really relate with that in so far perhaps trying to assist this working class. What are we saying about it in the midst of this, the theft that has taken place, that is not necessarily, we cannot apportion it to the people that are using the services. But to also say that the law enforcement agencies, I want to find out, has there been any body who has been confiscated thus far from your knowledge, and any security, and I'm also interested in the security company, that if it's a company that we've given the service to look after our infrastructure, what has been the response from the security and from our side, perhaps trying to check what is it that we could have done to perhaps prevent. Yes, we know that criminals are very clever at times, but my issue is that are we going to do anything about this security? And really the contract of this security, I'm also interested, what type of a security company are we having? What is it that is they are expected to assist us with? And at a point where this infrastructure was really taken out, like the entire in Gauteng, it's troublesome, it's worrisome, it's almost just rapid. So one back to also wants to ask the security company, are you going to beef it up and to make sure that this doesn't reoccur in a manner that it is done? And what is it is going to cost us as well as Transnet? We understand we are in the issue of mining, we don't have really funds to cater for such, but the infrastructure is very important for the livelihoods of our people. Whatever that we can do, but if we're going to be subject of theft, I mean, how much is going to cost us to really service this infrastructure, and where are we going to get the money? And I hope while I'm making a statement, you are capturing my questions and what I would really be interested to understand. And it brings me to a point where there was an honorable member who said to me and reported to me continuously to say there's an advert on ENCO or something like that that goes on. It's about Transnet. Perhaps it's within your communication strategy where it was relating, trying to show the good, the infrastructure, I think. So it was a good advert trying to show the things that you're having. But this member was very disturbed to say we are showing public that these two, whether it was cables, I'm not too sure, I didn't see it. I did raise it with a peer. He didn't find anything to say, check with Transnet, is there anything that they're running now in terms of advert and trying to show the infrastructure and so forth and so on. But the member was saying we're showing the thieves or the thugs to say this cables or something like that can be utilized. I just want to find out that if we have such, and just re-look into it and to see if it can really attract wrong persons. Concerns raised in the PC in your first slide, it was consequence management, fruitless, wasteful expenditure, CSI projects, and I think to large amount you've covered, and issues of operational efficiencies. Now, the media reports, we've received them, we welcome that, and we commend the Transnet, or rather the department, for issue of confiscating criminal elements, especially these ones who are corrupt executives. But the point I want to raise there is the first one to say that the issue of the time frame for me is very worrisome, to a point where corruption sits with us such a long time at the high echelons of our own establishment, and we're unable to see it. We see it now at the extent of it with Zondo Commission, and the question becomes that what is our checks and balances to really look at these things? And I'll tell you, because you say in your slides, the law firm in February 2019, it handled a case of its executive found committed serious misconduct. Adjudication is continuing, as you say, of the cases. Lastly, they are finalized, and you say criminal and civil procedure, a prosecution is recommended. So I want to know how many cases of that nature do you have, whether criminal or civil cases? And out of those recommendations, perhaps the one that you would have received from this law firm, I wanted to ask the name, but I think the person, gentleman who was reporting on the issue of the legal, he did mention that it was original, if I'm not wrong. So I want to know, out of those recommendations, how many Alpha Criminal. You don't have to give me the stats now. You can always do it in writing through the chairperson's office. I can always get it then. But I want you to answer it to say how many of those are criminal cases, how many are civil cases, and on the civil cases, exactly the extent of what is the value of the money we are likely to claim or recover from this corrupt element of senior executives. And the law firm, the regiment, like you are saying, you've given them the contract to really look into it. However, you do have a legal department. Perhaps you will tell us and inform us the reasons you might want to have a specific law firm, of course, for other skills and so forth and so on that you might not have. But the fact that you've got legal, one would really ask a question, at what point does your legal department do what? And then you need a law firm. And considering that it has started from 2019, like you're saying, in February. Now, I'm counting the month. I think it's 10 months later, if I'm not wrong, or perhaps, we're already in October now. So that was Feb last year already. So I want to find out, really, of the firm to date, what has been the cost to this entity to do Transnet insofar as you getting their services? How much are we really expected to pay them? Or what is costing us, really, in terms of our own coffers? Look, Transnet, and I agree with the other speakers, it's got a good story to tell, lots of stories. You look into your presentation, we went there, Chairperson has said that, but I want to note, are we communicating these matters to public, including this ones of corruption? Because it's no secret that when it comes to corruption, the only corrupt people we think about, or society and the narrative, is that it's only politicians. Often, at times, it's not true, that is the fact. Now we're seeing it with Transnet and Zondo Commission, what is uncovering is that there are senior officials, our own public civil servants, that are doing these things. So we want to know, are you communicating this information, or are we just going to get a peace and crisps? But I just feel that perhaps your communication strategy around that should be able to speak to it. You mentioned about pensioners amending pension rules and allow flow. So what will when will this be done? Because you understand the type of persons that is getting affected around this. There's issues of litigation, and you speak about settling out of court and on the entities. I want to know which entities I might have missed it when you were presenting. It has gone long, and you say it has gone long enough to a point of more than the prescribed applicable litigation period. Therefore, you want to settle out of court. I want to find out what you mean when you talk about settling out of court, and you want sanity to prevail. Who is owing who? At what cost? This little out of court does it mean to us in terms of our coffers? And remember, Transnet as well, in terms of funding, the issue that you are getting funding through the we don't call them bailouts, but you know what I mean. I might have forgot that now. Zondo Commission providing offices, good and well. We commend you for doing that so that they do have access to information. The question is, has there been any matters that have been put down of your own existing executive, if not the lower paid earners, cases referred to NPA concurrently? So we don't wait for the Zondo Commission to really finish, but in terms of your legal department, as in when Zondo uncovers all these things, are there any civil, if not criminal cases that you would have referred to NPA that don't necessarily have to wait because the person is still in the employ of Transnet? And the impact of lockdown and easing of restriction, there's issue of revenue that is needs to be made available, that is less than of a budget. There's been steady month to month, and that's what you are saying with easing of lockdown restriction. So the question is, has there been slight presentation on the improvement per month? If we can just get that month to month that we speak about, if we can get that information moving forward. On slide 10, there's a cost making good progress on a number of commercial issues, which, if resolved, and that's what you say, will release unplanned cash into the system. Can you expand on that, commercial issues that you say, if they are resolved, then it will release this cash into the system? So if you can expand on that for me. Slide 11, I want to commend your ambitiousness, and I see that, and that's good. It seems you're saying that it seems to be low, fast forward. So what I see there is that the graph that you are giving us, and fast forward it, I just want to go to the one that date immediately go to the 30th of September 20, and it says amortizing. I see it going slightly up. So if you can just explain that for me, and I read the months from now, then it speaks about 10 months already. So I want to see if you think the whole green amortizing goes up completely, shoots up. If you can just expand for me, what does that mean? On the limits of repayments in the next 3 years, so let me leave this other technicalities. I'll go to slide 12, the issue of ratings. Local currency, I realize that the local currency is in the red and we have only foreign currency that we see it in the green. Can you expand on it? We understand the issue of the rand and so forth and so on, but there's a lot of market and you always make reference, and of course you're working with China, seems that it's very steady, and I agree with Honorable Gumede when he says that the projections really in terms of what we are likely to see happening, it's really up. It's really ambitious. I don't know. You will educate us further. Slide 23, refined fuels. And the bullet 3 says petrol and diesel consumption forecasted to decline in the medium to long term. And then you make reference to IRP where it gives you options of renewable energies and mix. Meaning energy mix and for more renewable than diesel. How have you related with it? I mean, it's 2018. If you can just expand on the options, because you just punch it and you leave it there. So I want to find out how you related. Second, but not the last, School of Engineering, I want to commend this one on slide 83. When you speak about School of Engineering, the internal learnerships that you have, cost of the, so I want to know, what is the cost of this entire program that you're having? What is the value in monetary terms? And I want to find out that, because want to understand, are you getting value for money? And are you also considering internships? Because I saw it's learnerships, but do you have interns around that? But the question is mostly that all this work that we're doing and giving the skills that you are transferring, but are we retaining and are we attracting people who stay in the establishment? Is it mainly outside or is it internal? If it's internal, what fruits are we really yielding around that? The workers, this is the last point, Chairperson. On the hostel state, there's a slide on the hostel state, it's slide 92. It speaks about the helm of the workers. So I want to know, because immediately you answered by giving us the human settlement, and you say, because it's about the state of hostels, and what is written there is really worrisome, because us as public reps, whatever we do, we want to do it for the benefit of the working class and the poor, and including every other sectors that are involved. But when this sector is hugely affected, because this is the sector that is moving Transnet towards it, this is a sector that is working, this way you have workforce. So I want to find out the hostel state on all those challenges that you've cited there. And of course, we say human settlement, we give you certain hectares of land, we are showing us there, and Transnet will continue with its own strategy. So can we receive the Transnet strategy as much as we are saying this is what, so that we are able to move with yourself and tick the boxes where you are making right insofar as dealing with the state of those affected officials that are working for Transnet in these instances. But overall and above, Chairperson, I want to really commend Transnet. I see where they're going, and really I want to resist what Honorable Maut would have said at last statement, where we don't really want to see Eskom going any other way besides it going up and make sure that its work proceeds. But thank you so much to the chairperson of the board and the entire board and the management. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable. As portfolio committee members, I think I need to put that into proper perspective. As portfolio committee members, we need to appreciate that there is nothing prohibiting us to request progress reports to any of our entities. It is a standard that all companies will appear before us to table their annual report, but that doesn't mean in between we cannot call any entity to update us on the progress so far. Therefore, this meeting is not premature, but this meeting, let's take it as part of our own oversight as portfolio committee members. We have that obligation of making an of doing an oversight to all these entities. Therefore, I think we will be getting even other entities before the annual, before the presentation of the annual report, just to get we are not be surprised when the annual report comes. We are surprised by serious problems and challenges. We need to see these problems coming and try also to input and criticize in order to help the entity to resolve those particular problems. Therefore, I will give the CEO the opportunity and the head team to engage the questions that have been put and the comments that have been put in front of them. Thank you. CEO?
Thank you, Chair. We have noted the questions that have been raised, and also apologies to the members for the lateness of the presentation. And as you indicate, we are more than happy to come back and make further presentations in whatever form that is requested. The point raised by Honourable Member Maotwe is accepted, that we should come as soon as we've got the audited financial statements and present on the previous financial year. I've asked, all of the executive will answer different parts, and if there's anything that's left over, I will come back, Chair, towards the end. But we welcome the questions and would enjoy the engagement. So can I ask, you know, we'll start from the top, from the first questions that were asked, and also reflect a little on some of our partnership initiatives with PRASA to try and deal with some of the theft. So, Cesar, if you could start with most of the ones that have to do with TFR in one form or the other, and we'll take it from there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Committee Members. So I will deal with all of the issues that have been raised relating to the Transnet Freight Rail. For clarity, on our side, our trains move freight. But I think members are absolutely correct that we are faced with exactly the same challenges that are being faced by our partner entity, being PRASA, in that we have recorded a significant increase of theft on our network, and especially as it relates to the theft of cable. In addition to that, from our side, we've also seen an increase in the theft of some of our signaling systems and the batteries, which allow us, I mean, to be able to move our trains effectively. This has actually led to a number of delays in trains, which then equally leads to unhappiness from our customers because we're not able to deliver some of their goods in time to the ports. We also have an additional challenge in that we have a shared infrastructure, especially within the Pretoria complex and the Krugerstock area, and that shared infrastructure is with PRASA. So not only do we have our own challenges on our own infrastructure, but in those specific areas which we deem as hotspot, I mean, areas, we are also, the risk of cable theft has significantly increased given some of the challenges that PRASA has been facing in the last few months. So what have we been doing to try and resolve some of those challenges? One is that we've had to actually increase the use of technology. So we have been using more of the drones and the helicopters to try and assist us to identify the hotspots and to respond as quickly as possible when there is theft. But in order to move our trains a lot more effectively, especially where there is a shared infrastructure with PRASA, we've also had to convert to use more of our diesel locomotives as opposed to our electronic, locomotives. But that would have meant that we now have to go through the process of removing the cables in order to allow the diesel locomotives to run through. We've also initiated work streams together with PRASA in order to jointly try and find solutions to the problems, that we are facing. And in order to actually assist them, because I think that committee members would be aware that PRASA has been challenged in the last few months with not being able to secure the security that they would require to safeguard their part of the infrastructure. So we have been, as TFR, been assisting as far as possible to assist in terms of deploying additional physical security in those areas. But we equally realize that this problem is going to be with us for a very long time, and therefore we have to start looking at different options to try and reduce the theft of cable going forward. And in that regard, we now have what we call a three-year plan, which is geared towards beginning to increase the deployment of technology and rather than depending on what we're using, right now. And that talks to the converting some of the copper cabling to cabling which is less prone, because there are new technologies that are in place today that would allow us, to be able to do that. So that is really going to be a key focus area for us over the next 3 years in terms of reducing our dependency on the normal traditional ways of security, but beginning to use more technology to safeguard our assets. It also talks to ensuring that we also introduce new generation technology to also safeguard the goods that we're moving, such as the containers, in most of the containers, we are supporting the automotive industry, and we'll be looking to make sure that we also look at new opportunities to safeguard those, further. Whilst I'm still talking about this issue, I thought I would also address another question that came through from one of the honourable members around what we're doing in terms of driving the cost of our operations. If we had had an opportunity, you would have seen that on slide 62, we did actually identify that one of TFR's key focus areas would be to try and drive the cost compression. And this is being done in collaboration with some of our key customers, in appreciating that most of our export customers are not competing amongst themselves only, but they're competing with other exporters around the world. And we have initiated we've undertaken initiatives to reduce our fixed cost and also to look at reducing the unit cost of operation. We are challenged in that most of the traffic in the areas where sometimes we're deemed to be a lot more pricier than road is that we're challenged in that you would find that our volumes are one directional. So therefore, you'd find that we end up not being as competitive as we would want to be in relation to our competitors, because within the rail space, we don't have the monopoly. I think that from a rail perspective, our market share last time we checked was between 52% and 54%. So we're definitely not a monopoly, and we are constantly competing with the trucks on the road, who sometimes have a better opportunity to be able to carry one load to the port and carry and be able to also get additional volume from the surrounding areas in order to reduce the unit cost of moving some of the freight that they would be moving going forward. So I'd like to actually, stop there, because I think I have actually addressed the issues relating to the TFR space. But indeed, the safety and security issues are a big issue, I mean, for us at this point in time. But we hope that with the work streams that we've initiated between ourselves and PRASA, that we will begin to see good progress going forward.
Chair, can I ask Kaya to answer the question that relates to people and that came up?
Thanks, Portia, and thanks, Chair, and members and board members. I think that the first issue, as I understood it, if I was to sum it, pertained to given the risk that we highlighted from a COVID point of view about some key portfolios that we have been occupied by over 60 people and the challenges it brought during COVID, how are we dealing with the issue of improving the skills pipeline? Now, there's a number of things that as a company we're doing, and maybe I should start with the very over 60 people and all of that. So we appreciate that the rail ports and whatever are very specialized skills, and Transnet, we appreciate that Transnet is in many instances almost the sole custodian of some of those skills in the country. There's no labor market in some of the areas for the particular skills that Transnet does. So it becomes incumbent on Transnet to act to develop those capabilities, not just for itself, but also for the country. And that's the philosophy that we take as we do this, which is why that one of the things that we do as a company is to put in place, we have an initiative that was started, actually that's been under discussion a while ago. I think some of you, of the members of the portfolio committee, will know of the Transnet Academy. We don't purport that it is new. And actually the fact that it survived, that thinking has survived for so long, in a sense, indicates the fact that it was quite a valid idea. It just never, for one reason or the other, got executed in the manner that it should have been. And we are now executing it properly, in our view, which is the Transnet Academy. I think colleagues would know this discussion has been in Transnet from 2013 onwards. We are putting into play that particular idea as a consolidation of the different schools, in part because what we realize is that because we have not managed the schools in the manner that we should, we have, for whatever reason, underinvested in them. We have not given them all that they needed by way of the technology that they should have had, the facilities they should have had, and the faculty that they should have had. We've underinvested in them because they compete for resources with other priorities within Transnet, and they tended not to get as much as they needed, even though they are very integral to our operational capability going forward. The second issue that we looked into is that if we consolidate our capabilities, and there were studies, as I said, that predate this management that reference to this, if we consolidate our skills, we can then begin to benchmark our training capabilities and skills development capabilities against comparable authorities in the world. So we can then begin to compare the capabilities of our port school against the Singaporean port school, the Rotterdam, and all of the other authorities, so that we know that the quality of the product we generate is comparable. Generally speaking, we do produce a comparable capability, but we just need to invest better in it. Also, we want to improve how we partner with local institutions, from TVET colleges to universities, at research institutes, and all of that. So that's one initiative. We will come back to the portfolio committee one day and say a bit more about. And of course, we're digitizing the school, and COVID is one example about why that is necessary. The second initiative around skills is programs that we call young professionals in training, graduates in training, accountants in training, and all of that. So as a company, we've been running that throughout our history. It's part of our shareholder compact. We run those programs. Just one of those programs, called the Young Professionals in Training, has about 207 professionals in various skills that spend 2 years with us. A number of them get absorbed within Transnet, and a number of them go into the rest of the industry. So we generate engineers, as a company, we generate a whole range of professionals, accountants, and all of that. It benefits the company, it creates a skills pipeline coming to the company, but it also supports the economy. Even on the specialized technical skills, our attitude, Honorable Chair, is that we're not going to just generate purely for Transnet. We're going to also build the skills pool for the logistics and transport industry for the country. And that's our attitude in how we attend to this matter. So it's a definite focus of Transnet, and we have sustained it even during COVID. We're continuing to train the YPTs, interns, and all of those are in Transnet, and the work is ongoing. The last two I want to raise, one is a problem we call silver foxes. So even some of those over 60 people, some of them will go back to operations, and they're quite vital to making our operations efficient, including their role as supervisors. A lot of them are supervisors. But some of them, for health reasons, can't go back. Some of those would be able to play a role that we call the silver foxes. We've launched as a company a program called Silver Foxes, where we take to complement the young people that we take in at the early end of their careers. We're identifying a group of seasoned professionals, some that are just before retirement, but even earlier than that, those that have very, very concrete skills, we are deploying them to act as mentors, coaches, and troubleshooters for the younger professionals that are coming into the system. So the Silver Foxes program is another big program in that regard. And the last program here is just our org design, the way in which we've designed the organization. Is to ensure that people are able, historically what has happened and what has weakened our operational capabilities is that generally our career structures tended to absorb people. As the people become more and more senior, they become less and less in operations. The way we are designing the organization is to ensure that people can rise throughout their careers and stay in operations. So if you look at the new structures that TFR has created, we've created corridors. Again, it's not a new idea. We don't purport that it is new. But we have implemented it, I think, in the manner that it is intended to be. So you can have people rise to the highest executive levels without being removed from operations. Maybe I should end the chair in the interest of time. Thanks.
No, do you want to come in? I just, do you want to come in on some of the financial questions, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO. Chairperson, on the financial questions, maybe I should start on the issue of not having financial results for 2020 March. And maybe we didn't highlight enough the fact that the COVID-19 impacted timelines in so many areas. Our year-end being 31st March, we were meant to start with the audit roundabout when the lockdown started. And it therefore meant that because the auditors were non-essential service, they couldn't really start with the work. As a result, National Treasury gave all the entities, state-owned and government departments, an extension to the end of September, and indeed, Chair, the committee is correct. Round about this time, we would have come with the audited financial statements to the committee to share the results of March. However, because of the extended timelines, Chair, to allow the lockdown to open up, we are just at the final stages with the auditors, and the closed period is necessary because although we are state-owned, we do work with capital markets, and therefore we have to treat all our lenders and all our investors to receive the information at the same time, but most importantly, to close out and get the final audit opinion from our external auditors, and we are just about there, Chair, on the financial results. On the question, Chair, around the ratings, just to highlight that the colors don't mean much, Chair. It was really just to differentiate between the local rating from the international rating. So red, maybe next time we'll use different colors because we do associate green with good and red with bad. But all the ratings downgrades are bad. So we were just trying to differentiate from the local ratings to the foreign rating. And indeed, we have been impacted as Transnet, just like the rest of the country, Chair. You would note that even the banks, as the country was getting downgraded, also had to be downgraded after the 27th of March. So it is more a sovereign matter that we are all impacted. However, as far as it relates specifically to Transnet matters, we are indeed working on the issues that have been raised by the rating agencies. Moving on to the question here on whether Transnet financial sustainability is intact, and the question is probably directed to the chairperson, but from the forecasting process that we do from the financial chair, indeed we are working towards ensuring financial sustainability. The guarantees that were mentioned, that are 3.5 billion shares, they are very old in that they were only entered into around 1998. And since then, Transnet has not come to the shareholder or to government to ask for any new guarantees. And they may well be related to very specific contracts, because when you deal with multilateral, sometimes they do request such, not only because the entity is in trouble. So we are working towards a self-sustaining model, Chair, that would not come for government support or bailout. On the question of the privatization, we do a lot of work with the private sector, but it does not mean that we are going through a privatization process, Chair. Because in the context of trying to ensure that our balance sheet is carrying as much as it should, and I think a question was raised around the fact that our gearing is at 43%, we invite the private sector to partner with us as Transnet to manage the activity that we do on balance sheet versus utilizing other people's money, but to achieve the same objective of the economic growth. And therefore, Chair, the mention of some of the adverts is not about privatization, but rather about partnership, because these are assets that we believe we are underutilizing, but through partnership with the private sector, we can get so much more revenue out of them without using Transnet money. And therefore, that is the concept and the strategy that we are driving in relation to the private sector involvement in the Transnet business. Chair, I think I have covered most of the questions. The last one was around the list of the commercial issues that we are dealing with in order to try and unlock cash. Just as a first instance, Chair, with the lockdown, we have seen that there is activities that we've not had to do. As an example, traveling has been minimized, and therefore we do see direct savings from what we would have budgeted for, and that is unlocking cash. In other instances, we are looking to ensure that where we have outstanding debt from our clients, which may be beyond the terms that we want, whether there's a dispute or such an issue, we unlock those quicker to ensure that the cash can flow quicker into Transnet, because if the disputes are prolonged, we may not collect as quickly as we would want to collect. And there's a few others that one can mention, but it is to unlock really cash, including in our procurement processes, where we are looking to ensure that we are getting market-related prices and there is no overpricing of the services that Transnet may be receiving from the various suppliers that are doing business with us. On the question of whether we continue to work with markets, indeed we do, Chair. In the last 4 months, we have raised a significant amount of debt, but within our borrowing program. So the borrowing process is really balancing what we require in the business over and above what we would have internally generated as a business. And therefore, the capital markets are still open to us. They are working with Transnet, even though we know that the liquidity is fairly tight in the market. We've been able to raise money, but we also don't raise money if we don't need it, because it does cost the entity. So we actually look for opportune time and the need in the business before we can actually raise money in the capital markets. I think I have covered the financial questions, Chair.
Yolis, can you follow up?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I will then respond to two questions and taking from what the CFO has said about private sector partnerships. Chair, it's very important to note that we are a state-owned organization. We do have a responsibility of stimulating and growing our economy, and we are cognizant of the state of our balance sheet, which is why we are very keen on collaborations with the private sector. We, at the moment, are busy reviewing our private sector framework so that it enables us to go into these partnerships, whether it's a concession or it's a joint venture or it's an acquisition. And we think and we hope that by the time we're done with that review, we'll be able to then look at various partnerships across the board. I mean, this it makes sense to in that sense, because then you have the risk spread across between ourselves and the private sector, which does have an appetite, by the way, to work with us, but as well as a pool of resources and both from a human and capital point of view. If I go to the next question, Chair. Is TIH still in existence? Yes, TIH is still in existence. It forms part of a unit that we call growth and diversification. That team looks at private sector partnerships in South Africa as well as within the region. We are repurposing and refocusing the team so that we can meet our objectives of growing our business, whether you're looking at new business or you're looking at an adjacent business or growing the existing business. We're currently in Botswana, we are in Benin, we are in Zim, and we are in Zambia. But, Chair, I think what I would like to say is that if you look at the SADC market, we've only just kept the tip of an iceberg in terms of what is possible. So when we are saying that we are refocusing on SADC, we think that there's vast opportunities that we have not captured. We are hardly in Botswana. We have a project there. We have a partnership there. We could possibly grow our footprint in Botswana. There's Namibia. There's Mozambique, which we have not even touched, and we've got three, four ports that are operating quite well in that market. We do consider other opportunities, Chair, outside of the SADC, but these have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis, because what is of importance to us, there are two things we have to look into. The value add for Transnet as well as the value add for the country. So in the instances where we've engaged with various countries outside of the SADC, we'll continue to do that, but those that have not materialized, it's through no fault of anybody other than the fact that as the engagements continue, I mean, we do a thorough risk assessment of those projects and the engagement through the engagements that we are having. And if we think that it poses a risk more than an opportunity for the country, we then are duty-bound to kind of relook at our position in terms of that particular project. To answer a specific question on Ghana, Chair, up until COVID-19 started, we have been engaging quite robustly with the Ghanaians. They asked us for additional information in addition to what we had submitted. As recent as a week or two ago, they wrote back to us to say that they are still evaluating what we've sent through to them, but because of their own challenges of not being able to meet as frequently as they would love to, that decision on the submission that we made, Chair, is still pending. We have not closed our doors in terms of looking at the rest of Africa, Chair, and even outside of our borders or outside of the continent. But the reality is that we would really like to hone in the opportunities within SADC. And I think it's on the basis of that, then we will be confident to pursue bigger and markets outside of Africa. So I hope it covers the questions that we asked. Yes, there was a question asked about the revenue that we made last year in terms of our corporate engagement. It was around about 3 billion, give or take, Chair, and all the other markets in Africa, just like we have been hit by COVID-19, are quite stressed, but we continue to have those engagements. Thank you.
Thank you. Pandilani, do you want to answer the ICT question?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, CEO. There are a few questions that were asked on my side. One of them, obviously, is the Gijima one, to say, why did it take too long? What were the issues? Some of the issues, obviously, that made this MSA to take too long to sign was based on the fact that this contract or the RFP was issued in 2015. And then due to the legal and the protracted legal issues, the contract, I think, ended up being signed somewhere in, the process started somewhere in 2018, where Transnet started engaging with Gijima to look at all the issues that needed to be resolved. So one of the main issues, obviously, were the technical issues, because by the time the RFP was issued in 2015 and the time that the contract was supposed to commence, there were a lot of issues and things that changed, more especially on the technical and technology space. So these were the main issues that made this contract to delay. And then amongst others as well, we also have issues of commercial in nature, where we've got CPIs as well as the forward covers and the CPI and the VAT, which at that time VAT was 14% and now it was then 15%. So those were the issues that really took too long to agree amongst the two parties to sign this contract. So there's also another aspect that was asked, another question, which is how are all these issues going to improve the efficiencies? So if we do all this digitization project that I've talked about, we are going to improve efficiencies in that we are going to eliminate most of the processes that are done manual at the moment. And then another area that we're going to improve a lot is in making sure that we share all the services across the organization to make sure that at least we avoid and reduce some duplications. So, another question that was raised was the issue of the lease of laptops, as to why do we lease laptops and what happens after the laptops after the contract has expired. So the lease of laptops should be seen as a stopgap measure. So we've engaged, or we started with the RFP process of going out in the market to procure our own laptops. Unfortunately, due to COVID and some of the technical issues that beset us in the process, the contract or the RFP was a non-award. So as a result, we ended up going through this lease process as a stopgap measure. However, suffice to say that at the moment we are in the process of going out in the RFP to resolve these issues. And then what happens after the laptops, the lease has expired, so we will return them to the service provider. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Pandelan. Stanley, do you want to deal with some of the legal ones?
Okay, thank you. Just to clarify that on the regiments issue that we were reporting on, we're recovering money from regiments, which was one of the vehicles of state capture. So we, as I reported earlier, we're expecting to get back approximately 700 million or so from them. So they are not acting for Transnet, but we're getting money from them that was taken away from Transnet. On the there are three entities that are assisting us in recoveries or in criminal prosecutions. It's the NPA working with the Hawks. They are doing their normal criminal investigations, and they're engaging us on an ongoing basis. It's a process, unfortunately, we have no control over how long the process will take. And then we've got the SIU. The SIU basically is a recovery mechanism that's available for us to explore or utilize to recover any monies that we may have lost, either from former employees or any other entity. And that's the point we were making earlier, that they've been assisting us in either freezing assets, pension monies due to former employees, so that when ultimately the civil matters go to court, we can get some of the monies that we've lost, or at least retain the pension monies that those employees would have accrued over years. And regarding the Zondo Commission, they are dealing with the state capture issues. Now, the point we were making really is that we've made office space available for them to access information and for them to easily access our employees
guaranteeing obviously the confidentiality that's required to our employees so that they can have confidence in the process and their interactions with the commission would not be disclosed to anybody who is not entitled to know what kind of information. And to that end, to date, we've had about 10 or so former and current employees of Transnet testifying before the Zondo Commission. And on the very same understanding that Transnet has no influence on what or who says what in the commission or to the commission. And regarding, we can provide a register of the civil matters that we're dealing with, just to give you a sense of what is it that we're dealing with from civil matters and so forth. So we can give you that information in the form of a register that we compile on an ongoing basis. We'll make it available. And then on the outsourcing of legal matters. Now, the only reason why you would see that legal matters are outsourced to legal firms, we run a panel of attorneys over a 3-year period or cycle. The reason being, as employees of Transnet, you would not be entitled to represent Transnet, for instance, in court proceedings, as the rules of court do not allow for that, and the rules require that the representative should be independent from the entity that's involved. So I hope that clarifies the issues that we require our clarification. Okay, yes, on the social total matter, it's a matter that we've had a relationship with both Sasol and Total going back to 1966 when the petroleum pipeline was laid between Durban and Secunda, as it were. And the understanding being that for us to transport whether it's the refined product or the crude oil from Durban to Secunda, it will be on a neutral basis. In other words, we will not charge them extra for transporting the product from Durban to Secunda, but it will be on the basis that they call it the neutrality principle. Now, as you know, regulation evolved, including the publication or the promulgation of the Petroleum Pipelines Act, which brought in a new regulatory regime on petroleum products and the transportation thereof. Now, the contestations are around whether we should change, as it were, both Sasol or Total, and the view that we have is that in actual fact, they owe us money. That's the contestation, because the courts have taken the view that because the arrangement predates the Petroleum Pipelines Act, the current regulatory regime would not extend to the prior period, which is the time when the arrangement around the pipeline were in place. So that's the contestation. But the bigger picture that we're trying to advance is that we've got an ongoing relationship with both Sasol and Total, and it will also, the relationship will then beyond the court proceedings. So to the extent that, you know, there's that business relationship that needs to be preserved, it will be in our interest and also their interest to explore the possibility of settling the matter. And that's where we are, but the matter is due to be heard from the 14th of September, but we'll see whether if there's anything that will happen prior that to. It's our wish, but if it's not going to happen, it's fine. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Stanley. Vili, do you want to just clarify the issue of COVID stats, yours and mine, as well as port operations? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Portia. Thank you, Chair. I mean, just to clarify, is the question that was asked by by Honourable Gumede, insofar as the statistics for the COVID impact was, the numbers that I have quoted of positive of 708 related to the division of Transnet, which I'm accountable for, which is Transnet port terminals, and the numbers that the GCE quoted, those numbers related to the entire Transnet, including all of the divisions plus the head offices. So hopefully that clarifies the numbers that I quoted. And there were questions that were asked that were relating to the delays in the port. Maybe let me begin with a statement that says we've come to realize and appreciate the fact that the supply chain or logistics is a team sport. And we, as the first line and last line in the supply chain, as early as last year, sharply recognized the importance of reducing the delays in the port. And as I indicated earlier on, that the impact on the citrus fruit last year even raised the attention of the inefficiency of the port in a way that was much louder and brought this issue to a much sharper focus. We were clear after doing our own introspection that we have failed in a number of areas. First of all, on the people side, we have not been quick to appoint the people that are required to do the operation, particularly a very important skill of the operator of lifting equipment. It's almost like a pilot if you're running an airline. If you don't have an OLE who operates your cranes, you're unable to discharge your duties in full. We have also have not been proactive in building redundancy in this important skill that's required in the port environment. We've also been quite remiss and delayed in the investment and renewal of our fleet, particularly a very important piece of equipment that supports the operations of the crane, which is your straddle carrier. You almost need a ratio of 1:3 of 1:4. In the past sort of years, we've been averaging 1:2, which was not sufficient to give you the efficiencies that you need in the operation. We have been lax in introducing incentives that are relevant to our operation. That issue has since been addressed, and I'll talk to that in a few minutes. And then more importantly, information sharing is absolutely crucial for everyone and everybody that's involved in the value chain or in the supply chain so far as the port is concerned. From a vessel arriving at Anchorage, even 7 or 14 days before it arrives at Anchorage, I need to have all the information about what's on the vessel, what's going to be loaded on the vessel. We have a very advanced system that can share this information, but we have been innovating in isolation. We have not been sharing the information. We have not been sharing the platforms with everybody that's involved in the supply chain. We need to collaborate as players in the supply chain so we can maximize all of the assets and all of the capabilities that we have to improve the entire supply chain. We've been haphazard in how the facility was utilized, particularly by the trucking fraternity. Truckers would arrive at any time without a specific appointment, and they would use the facility as a parking zone when we're actually supposed to be a throughput facility. So we're turning that around. We've just implemented a truck booking system that is bringing discipline into the system to make sure that the entire flow of the box from a vessel onto a yard, onto a truck, is a seamless process that has been planned in advance and that can be predicted. There are other external factors that were impacting our operation. As I indicated, inclement weather increasingly, which means that we are now challenged to invest a lot more smarter in equipment that can withstand the weather patterns that we are experiencing. The port in Durban is surrounded by residential area, is surrounded by depots, is surrounded by players who in most cases have very little to do with the supply chain that feeds the port.
The access road that feeding into the port of Durban has remained the same size for the last 20 years, and it's a road that's been owned by the city. So what we're starting to do is get all the players in the supply chain to sit together in a room and say, how do we resolve the issue of congestion around the port of Durban? Because it's not only a Transnet issue, but it's a fishing issue. So we're making headway in getting that forum to function in the way that it's supposed to be. I spoke about the 24-hour, 7 days a week, 365 days operation. Transnet operates like that. The port operates like that. We therefore need the depots, we need the packing houses, we need the trucking fraternity to also work 24/7 to maximize the full available hours of the day to make sure that we use these assets to full maximum. So we've made some headway. We've employed more people. We've increased the number of gangs in Durban, in Cape Town, in the port of Muha. We can tick that box. The people are in. The new equipment that we've ordered to support the cranes in delivering boxes a lot quicker to the cranes. 22 of those trailer carriers now being erected and being delivered in the port of Durban. Rubber tire gantries as well to support the operation in the port of Cape Town. So the investment in so far as the equipment that is crucial to make sure that the supply chain in the port flows is there. But what's required now, which is absolutely crucial, is joint planning, is sharing of information, is collaboration by everyone in the entire system to make sure that this supply chain serves the economy and is maximized and used fully. There was a question as well around the port being expensive. It's a much more complex question than that. Yes, given the distance, we as a South African port are versus the market. Shipping costs, yes, are expensive. But what's most important to the shipping line is actually time. So if we reduce the time the vessels wait to be serviced, there's a huge saving to the shipping lines. And it's also important because what's important to the shipping line is integrity of their schedule. So we have a very important role to play as the port to make sure that the shipping lines adhere to their shipping schedule. Because if you compare our costs relative to the global cost of handling a container across the seawall, we are below the global average. But what is costing money is the delays when vessels are waiting to be serviced. Thanks, Boj.
Thank you, Velina. Andrew, do you want to deal with some of the issues about the forecast?
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe just let me start with the forecast, and there's one or two other areas that I might just pick up on. In respect of the forecast, it is quite correct to note that the expectation is that we will grow both globally and in South Africa in 2021. All those forecasts are based on an assumption that a vaccine will be found within the next 6 months to a year, and that the COVID pandemic will largely be at least suppressed for a period of time, and that there will be a period of catch-up growth. So in the case of South Africa, it's expected that we will decline in GDP by about 9.5% this year, and we will increase in GDP about 3.5% next year as a catch-up of the decline this year. Thereafter, our growth is very muted in the region of about 1% to 1.3% for the next 3 to 4 years. So that just gives some clarity on the forward-looking forecast and why the 2021 numbers forecast for China, emerging economies, and South Africa seems to be so high. It's really on the assumption by economists that there will be a bit of a catch-up in 2021. Maybe if I can share, just deal with one or two of the other issues. In terms of mitigation of risks, we understand the risks that COVID has left us with. A lot of that has to do with the way we operate the business, social distancing requirements. It also has to do with the fact that we need to rebuild the volumes that we move. And there's a slide in the pack that shows you since March the buildup of volumes in all the main commodities and quite a sustained turnaround in that respect, particularly in respect of iron ore, coal, liquid fuels, etc. On the monopoly position, I think it is fair to say that Transnet is not a monopoly. A large part of the organization is regulated, so it's not allowed to abuse its monopoly power, particularly in respect of ports and pipelines. On the rail system, Transnet Freightrail competes very aggressively and very directly on many corridors with road freight operators. There's some areas of bulk operation which one may argue we have a very large market dominance in, but I think it's a mistake to label Transnet as a holistic monopoly. The issue of CapEx was raised. We are aware, and the GCFO was very clear on the fact that we need to be very cautious and we need to be very clear about what we can afford. So we are in the process of designing a new strategy and identifying the CapEx program that would align to that strategy, which also leads me into the discussion of working with the private sector. Our customers, Transnet's customers, are largely big corporates. We also have smaller customers. But in all instances, what we would like to do is work more closely with them in order for Transnet's revenue to be stronger. And that is a requirement for us to make the business, or a need for us to make the business more sustainable. In respect of governance, that was raised as one of the key issues. A key responsibility of my own is to look at the governance around the expenditure on capital projects, which are often technically complicated. They take years to fulfill, and we need to ensure that we don't go back to Transnet's past in terms of the delivery of large capital projects. So we are reviewing and improving the governance framework around capital projects. In respect of localization of suppliers, there's a strong drive for us to improve local content in all the procurement that we do, but particularly around capital project delivery. And the last issue that was raised that I just wanted to quickly respond to was the issue of the decline in the medium term in liquid fuel demand. To a large extent, this is driven partly by renewables, but also by fuel efficiency of vehicles, the fact that our economy is not growing strongly, and also that by 2030 to 2040, we should start to see a small percentage of vehicles driven by electric or other forms of power, natural gas, etc. That's where I'd like to leave it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Vule?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Portia. Thanks very much, Chair. From my side, there were two questions that were raised. The first one was related to the overpaying in terms of certain contracts. Where we are sitting as an organization, we've identified some of the challenges, you know, that we are looking at the moment. And in terms of that, we are looking at the element of doing price benchmarking to ensure that we are paying all market-related prices at all times. And this is what we are doing before we issue out the RFPs going forward. And one of the other things that we are doing ourselves internally is to do price deconstruction before we issue out an RFP, so that we can have an idea in terms of what it should cost. And this would help us a lot in terms of ensuring that, you know, we align with our budget. And over and above that, you know, we are currently looking at the aspect of reorganization of the procurement function so that we can be able to be efficient and be transparent in terms of all our processes. And one of the issues that we are looking at in terms of, you know, the current contracts, we are renegotiating all the existing contracts. Because of the number of contracts that we have within the organization, we are looking at about 20% of the contracts that we spend about 80% of our money with. And then the intent there is to make sure that whatever we are contracting with, we are paying market-related prices. And in terms of, you know, the localization of manufacturing program, this is a deliberate program that we've put together as an organization. And at the moment, we are starting with the manufacturing and supply of rail, you know, to make sure that at least we re-industrialize the economy. And this is really the intent, is to look at all, you know, items or equipment which we import and that are sitting at the critical part of the operation. And we are obviously looking at it from the point of view that we need to make sure that we create employment locally, and we have local economic development as well as enterprise and supply development. And this is really part of the initial phase in terms of our localization. And there will be more other commodities that we are going to pick up and ensure that instead of us relying on the importation, we create the market locally so that we can be able to ensure that, you know, the sustainability within our business. This program, we are running them in conjunction with the DTIC as well as the DPE because of the fact that this is aligned with the strategy that, you know, the government is addressing in terms of ensuring that we localize where we can. I think, you know, I've covered all, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks. Ralph, do you want to talk a bit about the manufacturing and TE?
Thank you, Portia. Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Ralph. I lead the team at Transnet Engineering. I'm going to focus on the questions relating to TEL, Trans Africa Locomotive specifically, and if there's any further, I can address them. So I'm going to give you a quick status feedback on what's happening with it at the moment. I'll address the technical issues that were raised and then just chat quickly about the commercial aspects as well. So TEL is a great story in terms of innovation and engineering expertise, and it's really performing well at the moment. TEL 001 is currently deployed at Pyramid with the shunting duties and undergoing dynamic testing. TEL 2 is busy with static testing at the moment. By the end of September, it should move to Pyramid as well. And once it's finished its dynamic testing, then we'll move both of them to Bloemfontein and start running some light freight loads with them to see how they perform. As the Honourable Member mentioned, two of the key areas in terms of imported content on the TEL is the engines and the traction motors. With respect to the engines, there's only a couple of engine suppliers in the world that build like engines, and so I'm not really sure that it's feasible for us to get into that domain without a considerable investment and quantities to be produced. What is possible for us, however, is to adapt TEL to different engine types so that we could conceivably offer to our clients different engine options to go with the fleets that they already have in terms of maintenance and support. In terms of the traction motors, we have developed our own traction motor. It's in testing at the moment. It's a light traction motor suitable for TEL specifically, and it will give us the ability to build that class of traction motors going ahead. Just some other interesting areas in terms of technology. TEL is equipped with our own control systems, and which gives us the ability to control the whole loco without any foreign software or equipment on board. And we're looking at various energy-saving options as well, such as running on alternative fuels like liquid natural gas and other energy-saving initiatives, such as using the regenerative energy from braking to be stored in batteries instead of being burnt off at the moment, very much like a hybrid car would use. Then in terms of the commercial aspects, so our estimate in terms of what would be a viable number to build per year to be profitable or to break even, in the past, building locomotives under license, we were at about 60 to 70 locomotives a year. That could be a break-even point for us.
Well, I've seen that part of the She hasn't said yet.
Sorry. Being the OEM.
So can everybody mute, please? Okay, continue.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't put my video on earlier. So in terms of being the OEM, we think we can bring the number of viable units down to about 50 per year. If we analyze the demand in Africa at the moment, the numbers vary depending on who you talk to, but it could be reasonably between about 10 to 40 diesel locomotives per year, so it falls short of what we would need to break even. On top of that, if you take that demand for, even if it was 40 units, they are in different axle classes, different power classes, and different gauges. So the real market would be substantially smaller at the end of the day. But it has given us the ability to develop technologies, and we currently have about 170 young engineers working in research and development on a variety of different programs. So we're definitely not sitting back when it comes to efforts in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, I thought I'd start at this point where Ralph sort of ends. I mean, one of the opportunities that we're also looking at, and this is in part given our role as having to help with development of some of the sectors where we operate, is the unions have approached us and have asked us to participate with the whole industry in doing a industry study to look at South Africa's total capability in this sector, so that we might be able to leverage our capability, reduce our costs, and be able to be genuinely competitive in a few areas on rail manufacturing. However, I mean, and I raise this in particular as this is a parliamentary committee, the issue of the Africa Free Trade Agreement is actually quite essential on this question. We need to make sure that on the issues of rules of origin, when the DTIC committees start to engage, that we are active and engaged and understand the implications for South Africa. Because if we don't have appropriate rules of rules of origin, we would end up being in a situation where we almost can't even compete as an African manufacturer, number one. Number two, it is important that we leverage the capability that's also on the continent so that we can make sure that at least whatever the small demand is on the continent, it's kept, and that we as South African and African manufacturers, we are able to participate and be primary beneficiaries from the free trade agreement, first of all. Secondly, the issue of which I wanted to sort of discuss, Ralph has pretty much spoken to in terms of everything that we're trying to do to make sure that we are an active player in driving manufacturing in this area. The other area that we're starting to look at is how we might be able to support in the area of lifting equipment, the gantries that Velile was talking to. Currently, we import most of that, and we don't have much capability in South Africa. But also, it's IP, intellectual property dependent. So we have to make sure that we negotiate properly, and as members would know, we are members of the WTO, so there are certain things that we cannot contravene as the South African entity. I want to get to the issue of the other issue that was raised on pensions. I just want to be accurate. On that front, we in December last year, we made the first lump sum payment of 10,000 Rand to the members who belong to the defined benefit pension fund. The second and third lump sums will be made in December 2020 and the third one in December 2021. And also as part of the settlement, the pensioners should see an increase of 11% in their pensions over and above the statutory 2% that they receive on an annual basis. So that really brings about redresses and inequity that has existed over a long period of time. I then want to also deal with this issue of hostels. So on the property side, we've got both the hostels. We've got about 20 hostels. Four are administered properly. We get our rentals and everything is fine. But even there, it's via, in a sense, an agent who does the collection. And then we have 16, which are just derelict. And we've had all kinds of problems with that, where we are not only responsible for the utilities of Transnet, but also are in the unfortunate situation where we are, the rentals are generally never paid. We are in discussions with the various municipalities to see in what state we might be able to transfer some of these, because frankly, it's no longer, most of our workers now have their own houses, or at the very least live on their own. We then have also other properties which are just residents, which are houses which have been owned by Transnet over years, and we've started a process to look at how we might be able to effect an equitable system for ensuring that workers are able to buy these. This is one of the important projects that CAPE, who's just started, will be running with as a matter of urgency. The issue that sort of is reflected in the case, the Sasol Total case, it ties up with an area of great concern for us, but which we are faced with between the chief legal officer and Andrew as chief of strategy, is around our relationship with the regulators. We are, as Andrew had indicated, we are not only regulated by NERSA on the pipeline side, we are the port regulator at TNPA. And then there is the competition law, Commissioner, as well as members may be aware that there's a bill that's been proposed which will see TFR being regulated. So one of the things that we've started to do is to do a review of all of these cases which are with regulators and to ensure that we review how we price, how we give access so that we can ensure that we in no way are seen as abusing our dominant position. And we've already started the conversation with the Competition Commission. We have a process for how we deal with their cases. And we've also started the same conversation with the court regulator to ensure that we deal with cases that are that are outstanding with the regulator. And we'll be doing the same with NERSA. NERSA would regulate the pipeline, but in our operations also would be the regulator of the LPG terminal that's out in Saldanha that would have been in the news right now. It's quite unfortunate that a battle that's happened between two entities has suddenly become intimates that there's a real risk on safety in South Africa. I want to assure the members in the committee and as well as the board that immediately after that Beirut explosion, we made sure to check that in terms of our practices of dealing with hazardous materials as well as explosive materials, that we are in line with South African law and regulations, and that actually we've done the best that we can. We are now in the process of reviewing and making sure that actually we keep the standard, and we'd be more than happy to discuss this further at a later date. I did want to raise this issue of safety because safety is a big concern. We are able as a company actually to be well below the targets in terms of lost time injury frequency and disabling injury frequency rates. But it is an area that we're actually bringing to the fore in the organization so that not only are we delivering reliably, but also we deliver safely all of the commodities that we're responsible for. I think, Chair, we have covered most of the questions, and as Stanley indicated, we have to have law firms on our books to represent us, but one of the big-ish things that we've done over the last couple of months is to make sure that we pull together all of the lawyers that we have, because we have quite a sizable legal team, and what we are making sure is that at least the internal legal consultation, we've got that completely covered, and we're using outside parties to the extent that is necessary and required by regulation. I'll do a last check. I'm not sure that the chair can actually speak given his voice, but I just want to give the board an opportunity to see if they want to come in on some questions whilst I'll just do one last check to make sure that we've covered all of the questions that were asked.
Are you Chairperson? Chairperson of the board.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was waiting to check if other directors have something to say. I think I'd like to respond quickly to this matter because it's really around this question of MNS and I think the letter written by the EFF. This matter arose as a parliamentary question on the 29th of August. The minister responded to it, and the matters that the minister placed before parliament are factual, and I confirm that it is as he says. So I don't want to add anything, but I just want to remind the honorable members and the committee that one of the first things that this new board did when it was appointed was to do away with any opportunity and possibility for the directors or the board to influence any matter that pertained to procurement. To this extent, we did away with what was called the board acquisition, and I think it was called Acquisition and Procurement Committee, so that we leave the directors out and they play their oversight role. I won't do anything in detail about the Pope Mulefe Foundation. It does exist. It has been doing work for close on to 20 years. Anybody who supports that foundation is not on a quid pro quo basis. It's in return for nothing. No family member benefits from that procurement. It's a charitable foundation. It has got strictly run on the basis that it would account for every cent that it gets. It audits its books. The beneficiaries are the students, whose parents, many of whose parents I don't even know. If anybody has got the basis to believe that that foundation is used as a conduit to transfer money to any individual, including myself, and they've got a proper case to make in that regard, we'll open the books to them. So what I'm saying is that it's a straightforward charitable organization. We were asked whether, and let me make that one point, which the minister does probably make in his answers, is that these many things that are said in the letter are false, because the press council made the finding that does not support those things that are in the letter. I don't know where they come from. In fact, the city press was required to publish an apology in respect of all of those things that they have said. So I think it's important that as public representatives, that as we speak, we should also speak in a manner that does not disinform the members of the public, but assist members of the public to understand the facts. Was the MNS contract extended? I would not know. I mean, it's an operational and management issue, and all I know is that Transnet was in the process of reviewing its panel, and it will reconstitute that panel. Were they overpaid? It's an operational matter that those who manage the finances of the organization would know. I would not know, because we don't determine what rates lawyers are paid. I think they are predetermined. So, Chairperson, I thought I should make that point, but also to say that to the extent that the questions which were raised related to direct operational matters, I know that the chief legal counsel was busy with the detailed response, but now she also had to fall under this act of COVID-19. I think as soon as she is done, she will complete that work. And that would be not about the foundation or any other thing. And it will relate to whether there is any favoritism towards MNS as a result of any other arrangement that they might have. I am pretty clear that the Pope Mulefe Foundation is clean. It doesn't benefit any member of my family. It doesn't benefit anybody. It's a charitable thing, and there are many other entities that support it. None of them does it on the basis that they would get anything in return. So I thought, Chairperson, that's the point I needed to make.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Dr. Opomolisa. At this stage, I think I will give the minister to just respond or perhaps wrap up so that we can be moving towards the end. Members are supposed to log in for the parliamentary session from 2 o'clock. Thank you. Minister?
Thank you, Chair, and let me thank the Transnet team for, I think, an excellent set of presentations that will give the committee a lot of information and opportunity to, as some members pointed out, engage on some of the divisions on a separate basis. The first point, Chair, I want to make to Honourable Mautwe is, I think she's a former employee of Transnet, so she should definitely declare that if that's true. But the second point, the letter, several letters that have come from her party have been responded to on the 14th of August from my office, and that letter has not been acknowledged by Honourable Mautwe or her chief whip. Secondly, in relation to so-called privatization, which is often a theme that is raised by her party, I think the colleagues from Transnet have made it clear, but in any event, or any disposal in terms of the PFMA, Section 54, has to be approved and concurred with, firstly by the Public Enterprises Minister and then by the Minister of Finance. Thirdly, just to emphasize the word premature and the circumstances in which financials for the year 1920 could not be presented, as the CFO mentioned, this is what they call a closed period. The Auditor General has also informed me that because of COVID-19, the audit process was delayed by about 2 months. But once the team is ready, Chair, you can be assured that they will come to you. In relation to the Zondo Commission and related litigation matters, we'll ensure that the appropriate information reaches the committee. I think two of the honourable members said the Transnet does have a good story to tell. There are many challenges, but one of the important things about Transnet is that it is not dependent on government guarantees. And that's a very good thing for an SOE. In a situation where everybody's asking for bailouts, and I'm sure that the management and the board will ensure that they keep that record absolutely safe. And most importantly, I think the work that is still to be done in relation to state capture and corruption is something that will be pursued relentlessly so that the country can be assured that all of the corrupt elements that have been in the Transnet framework have actually been dealt with by the law, and where possible, monies have been recovered as well. And finally, as many of you have pointed out, Transnet has some exciting prospects ahead of it, and I'm sure that the country will be made proud by the kind of progress both in South Africa and elsewhere. And ultimately, the objective has to be that network industries and those who control some of the aspects of network industries, like Transnet, must reduce the cost of doing business in South Africa and contribute to the overall development of South Africa. But where there are partnerships with the private sector, Chair, those are important opportunities for black economic empowerment. And there are a number of players that are involved in one or other area that Transnet is involved, and in addition to the work that they do in terms of training young engineers and professionals, I think that's the next target will be, how do we get black business more involved in a fundamental way in the Transnet business as partners? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Let me take this opportunity to thank everybody, the members of this portfolio committee, who have engaged in this report quite properly.
Chair, before we close, Chairperson.
Sorry, I'm not going to give anyone members, please. And then
That's all you know, David. That's what you are.